Beto, and Councilor Lodge from Ward 7. This is a regularly scheduled meeting of the Land Use Committee. We're being audio taped. We have a very full agenda this evening, so I'm going to take a minute to introduce my colleagues, members of the staff who are here. We're going to get right to work. To my immediate left is Councilor Tim Cote, Councilor Lodge from Ward 3 and a member of the committee. To my right is Councilor Jake Auchincloss, Councilor at Large from Ward 2 and a member of the committee. To my far right is Councilor Greg Schwartz, Councilor at Large from Ward 6, Vice Chair of the committee. And I saw a moment ago Councilor Amy Sangiello, Councilor at Large from Ward 4, not a member of the committee. I know that Councilor Harney is ill this evening and will not be joining us. I do believe President Lennon may or may not be able to join us tonight. If he does, he will be delayed. And I am assuming the other members of the committee will be here, but I'm not certain. To my far right is Wita Young from the Legal Department. Next to her is Neil Cronin from the Planning Department. And next to Mr. Cronin is Nadia Khan, our committee clerk. We are going to go through the items in order. For those of you who have not appeared here before, if you're the petitioner, you come up to the podium, you state your name, you state your address, and provide us with a brief overview of your project. If, by way of illustration, if the planning department has said in its memo, we have no concerns about this, we think it's a great project, or at least they say they have no concerns, a friendly suggestion, take your cue. You know, I'm a lawyer, and one of the things they teach you fairly early on and when you argue is don't get up and start saying things when you don't need to, because you only make more work for yourself. I'm being a little bit facetious here. Obviously, you're welcome to explain what your project is about, but if you can do it, if there's no questions and there's little opposition or no opposition, just make your point, tell us why you're here. We'll hear from the petitioners typically, we'll then hear briefly from the planning department, we'll open it up to any public comment on the petition, I'll take questions and comments from my colleagues, and I think for a number of the items we have this evening, it's my intent to ask for a vote tonight so it can go before the full city council on June 19th. Not every item here will be right for a vote this evening. Some I think petitioners may have talked to the planning department or the committee clerk already that there are some open items that will need to be addressed. Others, it will really depend on what my colleagues choose. But with that said, we've been joined by Councilor Deb Crosley, Councilor at Large from Ward 5 and a member of the committee. And our, neglected to mention, we take public comment on each and every petition. If you want to comment on a petition, it's very simple. Just raise your hand. I'll recognize you. Come up to the podium. You state your name. You state your address. And I ask that people keep their remarks to about 3 minutes or less. Again, we want to give ample time for you to be heard if you're a member of the public. At the same time, we need time to make sure that we get through all the petitions this evening and that we have an appropriate amount of time to debate and discuss whatever items are before us. So with that said, we turn first to 43-17. That has been postponed to July 11th. Do I need a vote for that? All right. I'll read into the record is a special permit to extend a non-conforming two-family use at 893 Washington Street, Watertown Street, forgive me, James and Carol Hoops. Petition for a special permit, Ward 3. Do I have a motion to postpone? So moved by Councilor Crosley. All in favor of postponement? 5 in favor, none opposed. It's postponed to July 11th. Next, 101-17, a special permit to extend a non-conforming use at 46 Farley Street. Brian McDonald, Continuous Improvement Realty Trust. This is a request to convert an existing detached truck storage structure into a residential unit, continue an office unit. This is also in Ward 3. The request is to postpone it to June 22nd. I just note that June 22nd is a Thursday. We typically do not meet on Thursday nights, but because we're trying to get our work done before the end of June, before the July 4th holiday, we are scheduling an extra meeting in June. So do I have a motion to postpone, Councilor Cote? Motion to postpone. All in favor of postponement?
5 in favor, none opposed. It is postponed to June 22nd. All right, next up is 127-17, a special permit to amend a special permit for 170 Needham Street by the Rockland Trust Company. This is in Ward 8. Good evening.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Franklin Schwartzer. I'm an attorney with the law firm of Schlesinger and Bookbinder at 1200 Walnut Street in Newton. I'm here this evening representing the petitioner Rockland Trust. By way of background, the property, 170 Newton Street, is located on a 27,178 square foot lot in an MU1 zoning district. Property is improved by a new 7,140 square foot, one-story commercial building with space for 3 tenants. The building currently contains 2 tenants. One is Jimmy John's, a 37-seat restaurant, and one is the Vitamin Shoppe, a retail establishment. The existing building, as well as the retail and restaurant uses for the property, were authorized under Board Order 229-13. My client would like to occupy the third tenant space, which is currently vacant, consisting of 2,513 square feet. Now, as you all know, Newton Street is a vibrant and busy commercial corridor. Unfortunately, much of it is still zoned mixed-use 1, and in the mixed-use 1 zoning district's banks, as well as retail and restaurant uses, are only permitted by special permit. As noted previously, the 2013 board order for the property authorized retail and restaurant uses for the property. Bank use wasn't requested at that time, and we're before you tonight to seek an amendment to authorize that bank use. Both the zoning review memorandum and planning department report confirm there is sufficient parking on site for the use, and that there's no parking waiver required. And the planning department had no concerns, so I believe I'll take my cue, Mr. Chairman, and thank you.
Quick question, this is not a drive-through teller or anything, is it?
This is not a drive-through, no.
So you park, you go to the bank, get out.
That's
okay.
Correct.
Planning department, Mr. Cronin, do you have anything particular you want to note here?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One item of note is that there was discovered through an ATM at the rear of the tenant space, accessed by the parking lot. Staff is just curious to see if the petitioner needed any specific hours or at least to allow for that ATM.
Mr. Kern, I don't believe actually we would, because I believe the ATM is inside the bank, and like a vestibule, like the Brookline Bank down here on Walnut Street or any place else. So I don't think there are any restricted hours to be required.
Okay.
Okay. So listen, you have to use your card essentially to get in.
That's my understanding, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Okay. Is there any member of the public who wishes to be heard on this petition? Seeing none, is there any questions or comments from colleagues? Councilor Schwartz?
Hi, this is probably a question for Neil. So can you just educate us into why banking is not one of the uses under MU1? I just don't understand why that wouldn't be, but I understand that, I guess, restaurant use is also not currently one of the uses under MU1. Is there a kind of a concept there that there's certain uses that, certain areas that use is not appropriate for? I don't understand.
I think it's tough for me to say the history of or the intent of the MU district when it was proposed and implemented. There is the feeling that banks do not participate to a lively pedestrian environment, which is maybe why a bank or, I don't know why a bank would be allowed and also a restaurant would not be allowed. You would think that a restaurant would be a lively sidewalk use. But I'm afraid I don't know why banks were not allowed and restaurants were also not allowed.
Okay. And I'm not aware of any pressure from the community for a moratorium on banks in this area, like we have seen in some other village centers. I'll just put that out there for my colleagues to comment if they have, but I have not, so I don't have that concern. And then my only other question is, could you walk us through just the parking demand calculation a little bit, the A minus B plus B? I thought it was a little opaque, but in the memo, it says that, you know, what the current use is something, and then you subtract what the proposed use is, and then you add back how many spaces are currently available. It just seems, so the only way I cannot make a head or tail of that is that the current use is, as envisioned, is actually more intense than the proposed use, because a bank, I guess, is less intense than what otherwise is currently envisioned for that third spot. I'm not sure what would be in that third area of the structure that would be more intense than the bank use currently under the MU1.
In terms of the parking calculation, retail has a higher parking requirement than a bank. I'm afraid I have to look to see what else would require a higher, or something like a daycare would require higher parking demand. But a bank is a less intensive use, so the A plus B minus C kind of works as a credit. If it's a multi-tenant building and one tenant leaves, ISD and the ordinance applies what's known as a credit, so that as tenants come and go, there isn't a requirement to increase parking. There's the site has operated as a whole, and that credit is there. And if the proposed use is less intensive than the prior use, the credit is allowed.
And then what if the use were to change back to let's say they lose their bank tenant and they put it, then it's under MU1, they can have a retail tenant. Do they have to come back?
Yes, the credit would evaporate.
Okay.
So if that credit has now been, I'm not sure the exact numbers, but has been taken up. So if there were to be a more intensive use, they would need most likely a special permit to either waive the number of stalls or locate stalls off-site.
Okay, because from what I understand, it's around 14 that they currently are credited with from the on-site. Is that right?
Correct.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Councilor Auchincloss and Cody.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to pick up the thread from Councilor Schwartz to the same question I had, which is, why does MU1 not allow banking by right?
You know, I'm gonna respectfully suggest that a very interesting discussion, but we're faced with it as a fact. I mean, if you feel you need it for your decision making on this, very happy to engage in the discussion.
I mean, the idea of mixed use is that it promotes a walkable, pedestrian-oriented environment.
Councilor Crosley looks very eager to edify us, so go ahead, please.
Well, I don't know the answer, and it's no surprise that Neil doesn't know the answer, because if you go into the zoning book that was just revised, there's clear intent, sections of intent expressed for MU3 and MU4, but for MU1 and 2, the discussion is reserved.
Right.
Because these districts were established quite a while ago at a time when we didn't tend to put statements of intent into our code. So I don't know that any of us can guess at this.
Respectfully, I suggest that when it comes as part of our zoning review process, this would be, I would suggest, something that would be quite appropriate for discussion. Councilor, go ahead, Councilor Auchincloss.
Well, it does affect my decision, because the spirit of mixed use generally is really contrary to the function of a bank. I mean, they're at odds. So there's, I think that the framers of that ordinance are telling us something by not including banking in there, and I'm not seeing a compelling reason to overturn that for a special permit.
Councilor Cody?
So Councilor Schwartz had some great questions, I guess, so I'm going to follow on one of his also. And the question is, to follow up on the special permit from 2013,
yes.
Did that restrict particularly not having a bank in there?
Absolutely not.
Because I know we have that in some cases where we said no banks, nail salons.
Yeah. Actually, interestingly, before I came here tonight, I did a little bit of research to determine how many banks are on Newton Street. I know when we all go to Newton Center, we can't trip without coming across a new bank. Newton Street, very busy commercial corridor, only has two banks, Eastern and Bank of America, and there's obviously a lot of commercial uses there. So it does actually seem like there would be a reasonable demand for a bank.
My view, for what it's worth, I'll be brief, is I think, Councilor Auchincloss, your point is very well taken about concerns about banks not enlivening the area, I do think, Councilor Schwartz, your point about it being Needham Street and not the village center of Newton Center, or for that matter, Newtonville or the Highlands, militates in this instance. I see very little harm, particularly there's no drive-through, which I think is generally not conducive to, although I must say it's convenient, and I'll profess to using it on occasion, but from a public policy point of view, may not be the best way of utilizing land. Councilor Schwartz?
So I'm in agreement. I was not saying that Needham Street is one of the streets that I think needs a moratorium, so I agree with those comments.
Just go ahead.
One final question on the ATM, which was brought up. Mm-hmm. So from your answer, Franklin, it sounds like it's within the bank, but it's accessible 24 hours.
That would be my... Unfortunately, I don't have some of the bank's bank, but looking at the plans, and from my understanding, it would be like any of the other banks I've seen, where you have to have a card and you have to access it via card at night.
Great. So is there some lighting that's usually part of the industry standard when you have an ATM like that?
There would be internal lighting for the bank, and to the extent that there's any parking lot lighting, there will be no changes to the hours of what's currently going on at the site.
Okay.
All set?
Okay.
Okay. So is there any member of the public who wishes to speak? Seeing none, do I have a motion to close the public hearing? Moved by Councilor Crosley. All in favor of closing the public hearing? 5 in favor, none opposed. Do I have a motion to approve? Councilor Crosley's moved to approve. Mr. Cronin, do you have a draft board order for us?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. No need to read this out loud. We can read to ourselves. Any comments on the findings, folks? Are there any conditions, Mr. Cronin, that we need to be aware of that are aside from our usual ones?
Well,
looks pretty standard
condition.
Okay.
Standard.
Oh, sure, of course, Councilor Crosley.
I have no problem with this, but if we're trying to create a basis for understanding, I don't see why number two doesn't make really sense to me. A bank is appropriate because the area is characterized by commercial uses.
We need to not adversely affect the neighborhood finding here. We need that finding under the statute. We have to have some reason it's not adversely affecting.
That it will not adversely affect the neighborhood. I mean, right. I can't imagine the reason why it would adversely affect the neighborhood, but I don't think that the fact that the neighborhood has a lot of commercial uses has anything to do with that. I don't know. It just doesn't make sense to me. Am I on my own here?
Well, you wouldn't certainly want to put a bank if it was all residential, certainly. I wouldn't. Ms. Young, do you have some other suggestions for us? You're a veteran here.
Not really. I understand the point about the commercial aspect of it. I don't think this finding actually needs to have the commercial aspect of it. It's just not going to. It's not going to.
We leave it a period after the word neighborhood.
Yeah, I think you can do that. And right,
let's do that then.
Right. But, and I would also point out that you can have banks in the MU2 as long as they're less than 5,000 square feet. So if you want to look into what the MU1 and the MU2 are doing, you have to go back to 1987, and it needs to be revised. That's clear.
Okay. Right. I can see the difference in the allotments or allowances. There's just no statement of intent.
All right. So why don't we put a period after the word neighborhood and the findings with that? Anything else in the findings? The conditions, okay, we have a motion by Councilor Clark. Yes, Councilor Schwartz.
Again, just on the lighting for the ATM, I just want to make sure that it's a safe kind of situation, especially if it's in the, is it in the back of the building, Franklin? Or is it on the Needham Street side?
Based on the floor plan, it looks like it's in the back of the building toward the parking lot.
Yeah, I mean, again, I don't know if that's just kind of built in, but I would want to make sure that it's well lit, although appropriate to the neighborhood as well. So it's probably a little bit of a balancing act there. I don't know whether we could just have that be some of the planning works with, you know, approves or something? Could that be something that you guys look at?
Why don't we put something in there then about planning shall approve the lighting plans near to the ATM?
Okay. And I don't want to be too noodling, but I think that's important. And just to make sure, everything else in this, other than the first paragraph there, is the same from the previous board order. Is that right, Neil? Like everything in the draft that we have here.
Yeah, we haven't combined.
Yeah, we have combined.
We are combined.
We are combined, and we do need to do some wordsmithing there, and I actually want to go by because there's referencing two sets of plans, and there's also a construction management plan.
Already done.
I'm not sure that if it's done, we don't need that construction management. So we'll do some cleanup, but it's not substantive work.
Okay.
So we are combining.
You talked about occupancy permits and all that stuff. I mean, it's already occupied. Okay.
That works. Okay. Good. Okay. So I have a motion by Councilor Crosley. All in favor? 5 in favor, none opposed, no abstentions, it carries. Thank you very much. Next item, 129-17, special permit to reduce the lot area size by 4% to 19-21 Beaconwood Road. This is Lento Development LLC, Kenneth Lento. This is 1921 Beaconwood Road, Ward 8. Good evening, Attorney Perks.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. It's nice to see you again after a substantial absence. Mr. Chairman, if it weren't for one element that you have, I'm sure, noted in reviewing the planning department's memorandum, I would take the same advice as Mr. Schwartzer and say virtually nothing about this petition because the planning department's comprehensive review, at the very least, didn't raise any issues and I think was actually pretty positive. We also fully accepted all of the suggestions of Mr. Dagley and his review. We spent a lot of time thinking out this matter. But there were a couple of unusual elements. If I could just take a couple of minutes, Mr. Chairman. I've been doing this for a very long time, and you have too. I'm not aware of anybody that has attempted, although it could have occurred, to utilize this specific provision of what used to be 3026 to allow for a waiver of lot area requirement of up to 5% in a case where, because of a lot line change, somebody needs to meet new lot requirements. And although there may have been one, so it's a little bit unusual, so I just want to go into that for a second. And then the other element that arose late in the game was a derivative of that. So I'll just quickly give the background. It's sort of unusual. There's an existing two-family house at 19-21 Beaconwood. If you've been to the property, you know it's surrounded by the business zone. There's a parking lot right around on two sides of it. It is the end of the MR1 zone on Beaconwood Road and then wrapped around with the commercial properties on Beacon Street. And the house was built in the early 50s on a, at that time, 7,145 square foot lot. Within the next couple of years, the Garden Realty, which is the realty trust that owned all the commercial property, on two small sales conveyed to the people who owned the property, the Rosenblatts, a small piece on the right-hand side, 188 square feet, and in effect the backyard of about 2,300 square feet, resulting in a total of what we have now, as determined by Mr. Porter for an instrument survey, of 9,600 and, I believe, 2 square feet. So property was then sold in 1960 to the Sazmary family, and it stayed in that family for the next 50-plus years until 2016 when my client, Lento Development, bought the property. So that property has been stable and effectively one piece of land from a perspective of use and occupancy, but has always been shown on the deeds, and have only been a couple because the Sazmary family owned the property for so long, fairly unusual, as three separate lots. So when my client purchased the property and wanted to remove the less than stellar small two-family house, they looked into it and the issue came up. I met with the commissioner and he indicated that although technically, well, we all know from the Bradford case and the like, that those lots having been in common ownership have been merged. And I don't think we could sell one of them off. But on the other hand, they've never been shown as one lot on a plan. And so Fisher reached the initial determination, and I had a chance to talk to him about it since this issue came up, but that if we wanted to take advantage of FAR for the full 9,600 square feet, we would have to Z out those lot lines, which would mean lot line change after 1995, and we would be subject to the strictures of the statute, and we would therefore have to meet new lot requirements. So we looked into this, and the determination was made that there was a waiver provision, and we could get a waiver for the lot area requirement if it's not more than 5%. 5 of 10,000 is 500. We need 398, I believe. And so as a result, we petitioned for this. Went through DRT, went through zoning review, and petition. I'm late in the analysis. Focus was made that there is a requirement that you should not be granting this special permit for this waiver if it creates any dimensional nonconformity. Well, the house that we have designed meets every new lot dimensional requirement, FAR at 9,600, lot coverage, open space, setback, height. We're combining two driveways into one. We're providing for a substantial landscaping plan. We're going to have 100-year drainage. Everything meets every requirement. But it was pointed out that there is a provision, though, that says that it also can't create a nonconformity as to lot area for dwelling units. Now, that's an interesting aspect of it, because if by definition the waiver is to reduce the lot area, then even if it were 10 feet, you could never meet lot area for dwelling unit. And so the only way that this could be used in an MR zone would be to never build a two-family house in the zone for which the property is zoned, because you could never meet 5,000 for dwelling unit. So if you get a waiver, by definition, you can't. So that's the irony here. I think there's a number of issues that might be worth exploring. As Neil pointed out in the memo, there's a couple options here. Is to, if the council agrees and the commission, the city agrees, to grant the waiver with a condition, and I propose it to read something like, if the commissioner of inspection services shall determine that a variance is needed for lot areas or dwelling units, that be a requirement before we get a building permit. I think there may be some options for discussion as to whether or not that is necessary. There may be an option for another approach. We could seek also to build a two-family house on the front lot, essentially almost the same house, and then seek a FAR waiver.
So let me stop you for a second, Attorney Parks. What are you proposing at this point in time?
At this point in time, and although it's my understanding, and I have today, unless Neil indicates differently, that you don't have in front of you a board order, but it would be my preference in the perfect world is that the committee would close the hearing, approve this. Neil and the planning department could prepare a board order that would approve it with the usual requirements and with the provision that I indicated, and that it could go to the council on the 19th. At least by that time, I would have had a chance to work with the commissioner to determine what course would be best, whether we would need to withdraw in effect or not exercise the permit and file for an FAR.
Why are we going to take this up tonight, spend a lot of time on it when you haven't quite figured out which way you're going to go?
I understand, and so I'm thinking that the best then alternative is to allow the presentation, answer any questions, and then have you continue the item. So that we can then address this sort of late discovery on this issue.
Is there any, I know folks who have special permits always want to proceed expeditiously, and I get that. Is there any, if we took this up, say, in July 11th, would that be problematic for your client?
It doesn't help to, I'm not going to even try to face them, it doesn't help even, for example, June 22nd would be more wonderful than July 11th, but I recognize that I'd want to have the committee comfortable with the final decision.
Well, you have to get your work done. So let me ask you this, Ms. Kahn. If we put it on for June 22nd, what else do we have that night? Not yet. Okay. June 22nd, you're going to be ready?
We have 12 hours. absence, illness, or famine or something, I'll have worked out whatever issues with my client and the commissioner and the law department is necessary to determine what's the best course of action.
Okay, why don't we do this? I'm going to go ahead, Counselor Schwartz.
I'm only going to jump in if you're about to move this to another stage. So I have some questions that I'd like answered before the next time.
Yeah, I'd really like to
in our ward.
So why don't, if you want to put some questions out there, let's put them out there now, and then I'm going to move to postpone.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mike, can you just explain a little bit better the... I don't see an elevation that shows the garage. Just from the plans that have been submitted, it looks like the garage comes out of ways from the building, and it's right in the center, and it has that peaked roof. And I was just wondering if there's any flexibility on that. I showed this to the other two Ward 6 counselors, and they expressed a little bit of concern. I know we're not a design body, but there has been all this, you know, back and forth about snout houses. Is there anything... If it's what I think it is, it's a significant... Well, there's some protrusion there. Is that not right?
Yes, but I think the way it was designed was to sort of have it set back, and then there'd be two spaces in the garage to make it smaller, and then two spaces in the front of it within the house on either side. I think that this was the way that was determined by the client, the architect, is a way to try to sort of integrate the garage in. Yes, it does project out, but it still respects the setback, and it allows the two curb cuts to be consolidated into one.
Yeah.
I think it was felt that the design worked that way. It does project a few feet if you look in the side angle. That's probably what you picked up on the first page of the elevation from the bottom right, where you can see that it does project to a small degree, but it sort of provides a little bit of almost like a little courtyard area in front of each of the units.
Okay, well, I think that this is not relevant to our approval. I might just, if you don't mind, grab you and talk a little offline about that.
Sure, that's
okay,
great.
Thank you. And Mr. Chair, this is the only issue that I thought I wanted to bring to the Council's attention, other than the 20-foot curb cut. That was the only other issue. I know that there's concerns about that kind of width, but in this area, I think it's okay given the commercial nature, but I wanted to open that up to Councilor Crosley, who I know has expressed concern about that in the past.
Go ahead, Councilor Crosley.
Thank you. You're right on my wavelength. So, and the reason I think it might be relevant, despite the fact that we're not a design body, is because we're not really sure whether you're going to ask for this or an FAR request. So I want to always be kind, but the way the garage protrudes in the front of the house is, I will be kind, I'll say, it's accentuated by the choice of roof design here. It's like the garage is the primary thing, and it's in your face, and you can barely see the entrances into either side, either one of the units. I think if we're talking about FAR, what we're supposed to be doing is mitigating the impression of mass and bulk if you're asking for more FAR. And if you have to go with the smaller lot, you will have to do that. And I think you're right. I think we should maintain this lot as a two-family use. It's in an appropriate location, and we should figure out a way to allow that to happen. And the building that's currently there needs renewal. I get all that. But when you... let me just say this. If you had a shed roof across the whole thing because your garage is at the same forward position, it's about 6 feet forward, something like that.
I see, yes.
And it's, you know, it's in line with the front porches.
Yes.
So if you just drew a shed roof all the way across and forget about that silly peak there that just draws all your attention to the garage, that would help the impression of mass and bulk. I can't say where we'd wind up on that, but it certainly would help, and then you could put windows on the second floor, and, you know, where now you can't. I don't know. It really disturbed me when I looked at this. They're probably, I don't know if you're trying to use the same foundation as the main building, or are you just starting all over again?
No, starting all over again.
There's probably a better way to handle this site than what you have, but I'm...
If I just for 2 moments, Mr. Chairman, I know that we're going to take this back up again. Just a couple of quick comments, and I welcome obviously the counselor's comment. First of all, part of the problem, Councillor Crossley, is that when you look at the site plan, you recognize that the house has to be where it is, just as the present house has to be, because of the city's drainage that so dramatically impacts the property and burdens it. That except for the patios that we propose, which as John indicated, the standard way would be a license to put those, that they just sit on the ground, and if you had to dig it up, you wouldn't have a problem. But we can't, we couldn't go back any farther, even though
I'm not trying to get involved in site design at all. I'm suggesting that you're making a difficult condition worse by the way the front is designed.
Well, we'll take that. And the second, the final thing, Mr. Chairman, is and let you move on to postponement, is that, yes, Councillor Crossley, although as a technical matter, should we go to this other alternative, we would be seeking an FAR waiver, but it would really be, with all due respect, a technical one, because as a practical matter, the same 9,600 square foot property would always stay the same. It's just... So we'll do the same FAR in the same density.
Let me try to say this one more time. I understand all the technical issues here, but if when we grant FAR, what we're trying to do is get the petitioner to reduce the appearance of mass and bulk, and you have a simple way to do that. That would make this a little bit better.
We're definitely going to take that back to the architect.
Councilor Schwartz, do you want to say something?
No, I just wanted to, there was one other piece. I just didn't see a landscape design, but I thought that there was a landscape plan, but I thought that there was a mention of that in the memo, so if that's forthcoming.
Yes, it's very extensive, and it's multi-page, and I can easily put it on a scan,
okay.
And then I can make it available. I thought I might have given it to Neil and to your clerk in a scanned version.
We'll get it to you.
But I'll make sure that I get it to all the councilors if there's any questions.
All right.
Okay, so with that, and I appreciate your accepting some of those questions and comments, I'd move to hold.
Okay, we have a motion to hold by Councillor Schwartz. All in favor of hold, 5 in favor, none opposed. We'll take this up on the 22nd of June. If you're not ready,
we'll let you know in advance.
In advance, let us know, and we'll take it otherwise July 11th.
No question. Thank you very much for your attention.
All right. Next, 126-17, a special permit to extend a non-conforming FAR and front setback at 208 Homer Street, Adil and Alexander Diori. This is in Ward 6. And Mr. Sachs, good evening.
Good evening. I'm Peter Sachs. I am the architect for the Diori's. Good evening. Nice to see all of you. I will keep it short. The Diori's asked me to do some renovations to their home, which would essentially remove a garage that is and a driveway area, which is currently a detached structure, and to consolidate the garage into the main structure, and to do a renovation of the kitchen and some bedroom areas on the second floor. The reason we're here is because of the FAR issue and the setback, and basically, because of the way that the house is built, a large portion of it is out of the ground, as the planning department has noted. So in the FAR calculation, we're actually counting almost 1,000 square feet due to the fact that the building is out of the ground. That's a little guy.
Go ahead.
Hey, buddy. So what we're asking for is FAR relief. It's an unusually small lot for an SR2 district, but a beautiful home, and one which we, I hope the committee sees that I think the architectural integrity of the building is considered as part of our design work, and that it at least looks, in my opinion, as though it were built with the original house.
Thank you, Mr. Cronin.
Thank you.
All right. Planning, anything of particular note here, Mr. Cronin?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As Mr. Sachs noted, the FAR for the lot and structure is already nonconforming, so the petitioner is seeking to further increase the nonconforming FAR. And also, the lot is a corner lot on Carlton and Homer Streets, and the existing setback is nonconforming, and the addition will increase that nonconforming setback by approximately 3 inches.
All right. Is there any member of the public who wishes to be heard on this petition? All right. Seeing that, I'm going to keep the public hearing open for a moment because I'm going to just make sure that my colleagues' questions don't stimulate somebody to want to speak. Any questions or comments from my colleagues? Councilor Schwartz?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Peter, thanks. I think that, you know, what you're trying to do here is great, and especially taking away the garage and the drive that are on the line or closer to the abutter is good, from what I understand.
There was a letter actually from that abutter, and they have supported the project and were very happy that there was more open space there.
Right, and I had one email from a non-abutter but a concerned member of the area of the neighborhood who I think just didn't have full information about the setback changes, so I clarified that for her. I guess my question was, there was a mention outside, and I know that this is within your right, but outside of the addition, there's a mention of the proposed deck, which does get very close to the setback. I think it reduces the setback from, I think, 17 or 16 to 9. On that east side.
Yes.
And I was just wondering if that's something that you're ready to screen effectively or scale back, because that's a place where you're losing some, the neighbors are losing some of the room, some of the feeling of space that that this property currently has for them.
Yeah, I can shed some light on that. My client did talk to the abutter. And I think the question that the abutter had was, is the deck area too close to the setback or whatever? And the setback is 7.5 feet. It is not 7.5 feet. And then they also, my client, the Diores, also agreed to maintain a tree that is there that provides screening between both properties. So I think that as neighbors, it seems that they've sort of worked this out.
So that's going to be the extent of the landscaping, or is there going to be any additional landscaping added?
At this point, no additional landscaping. I think that if I'm correct, the abutter was satisfied with the request. Let me be clear. The request from the abutter was, would you please keep the tree? And so if the committee would like to condition our approval with the maintenance of that particular tree screening, we'd be more than delighted to accept that.
I think that's important because obviously sometimes properties sell and then new owners come in and they might not have the same commitment. But I think that's important. You know, given that this is a significant increase in FAR, I think that would be appropriate to mitigate the effect. Even though the deck is not part of the structure, it is going to be an effect of this project on the neighbor.
I think my client's in agreement with that.
Right.
Okay. So, Mr. Chair, I think that was the main concern that was raised by my colleague.
Why don't we address that then, the condition, then when we get to the board order?
Thank you.
Anybody else? Councilor Clausen?
Thanks. I think this is a terrific project. It does exactly what we want a design to do when we're looking at imposing the FAR rule. I'd actually like to use it as an example of how difficult FAR is as a tool, because, in fact, this building If you do the math, it's about over 1,600 square feet over what's allowed by right using our FAR rules. And yet, you know, by what you're doing, you're making the structure more compact and leaving, therefore, more usable open space on the site and so forth. It actually works better in some ways. I'm wondering, when you say, or in the future for planning perhaps, maybe I missed it, but when we are looking at, especially a building that's already non-conforming on any matter, but FAR in particular, if the numbers could be done clearly to, so that we understand, you know, how much, not just by percent, not just by a 0.449 to 0.52 or whatever it is, but also in terms of the square footage. Because when I did first do the math, I thought, wow, it's actually 1,664 square feet, and I was skeptical before I looked at your drawings. And it really is because of how you designed this and scaled it that it works. And it's, you know, it's a nice project. One item in terms of possibly conditioning, I'm sure with a project of this scale and quality, you are intending to bring the sidewalk back to its proper condition when you move the curb cuts and so forth. Or should I ask you, is there a sidewalk along that side of the house? On Charlton Road, or does the sidewalk end at Homer? No sidewalk, no curb.
No, apparently there's no sidewalk.
And no curb.
And no curb.
Okay. Okay. So I was going to suggest that we, you know, just put that in there to be consistent with other board orders.
But they don't have one now.
Oh, I do have one question on the Everett Brook survey. It was a little confusing. It says buildings, and then there's existing and proposed square footage, and there's an asterisk, and it says excludes garage per section 1.5 point, whatever that is. I didn't have a chance to look it up. In our FAR rules, we don't exclude garages. Either, you know, when we do the calculation, we don't exclude garages from existing, even existing detached garages we include, as you know, because a garage can't be smaller than the shed that we can exclude. So I was just wondering if you could answer that.
Counselor Crosley, that if we approve these plans, you don't want that footnote in there because it's misleading?
That's a good way to put it, sure.
All right, so why don't we do this? Why don't we, if we vote to approve this, why don't we do this on second call, to give, subject to second call, give the petitioner's architect and the planning department time to figure this out, and either the plans get revised so that asterisk is removed or there's an explanation as to why it's appropriate. I don't want to do it this evening.
No, of course not. And if it means changing the numbers substantively, and you know, I'm still fine with the project.
They do actually have a note here that they state zoning compliance determined by municipality. See the architect's documents for FAR calculation, and the cover sheet for our plan is very comprehensive about what the FAR calculation is. So we do include the garage.
I believe you. I just, you know, could it be consistent on the surveyor's document then?
Okay, I'll ask Bruce if he's not too grumpy about it.
Okay.
See if we can get a revised page submitted. Okay.
Okay, we'll do.
Good. Okay, with that, is there any member of the public who wishes to be heard? Seeing that, I'm going to entertain a motion to close the public hearing. So moved, all in favor of closing the public hearing, 5 in favor. Councilor Schwartz in favor, 5 in favor, none opposed. Public hearing is closed. Do I have a motion to approve, Councilor Schwartz? And we're going to take the findings first, and then we'll get to your condition, make sure we include that. Subject to second call, yes, thank you. Okay, first one, any issues with the first finding? Second finding, any issues?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Should we take out only and just say three?
Yes. Take out the word only in the first finding. Good idea. Okay. Anything on three?
It's on two. In addition to the subordinate aspect, is there any further comment that we want to make? I think it's been said that it's a small lot, or is it consistent with some of the neighborhood FARs? That was the sense that I got from the memo. That was
I think it says not in derogation of the size, scale, and design of other structures in the neighborhood. Seems like that would cover it.
Okay. That's part of our required finding, though. So, do we say why it's not in derogation? Or, right? I mean, that's just stating a statement.
You're looking for a statement about the...
Looking for supporting comment, supporting clause there, that it's not, is it not in derogation because it's not in derogation? Is that what we're basically saying?
I mean, I don't think we need it, frankly, but Ms. Young, do we need that?
I think you've got it covered in the sense you say it's consistent with, before you get to not in derogation, you say it's consistent with and not in derogation of the size, scale, and design of the other structures. So it's
okay.
Consistent with the size.
Okay, we're not just repeating what the standard is there. We're actually saying that that exists.
That is the standard. If it exists, you can repeat the standard because it doesn't exist.
We don't have to add to the rationale. We have to make that finding.
I'm just saying, you know, we have colleagues that see a number like 0.61 when 0.41 is allowed, and they... I mean, I think most people, when they first see that, so I'm just trying to give enough rationale that a basis that we could answer that question before it comes up. But if nobody else agrees with me, that's fine. I'm
not
ready
sure we're
going to
satisfy anybody with an added statement, and I'm very happy on the full board, if need be, to explain why this is, in our view, quite appropriate.
Okay.
Particularly, I think there's the unanimous vote here, which I expect there will be. I don't anticipate a lot of issue on this one. If I'm wrong, I'll stand corrected. Okay, any more on the findings, folks? Any conditions? I want to get to Councilor Schwartz's condition. How do you want to phrase that, Councilor Schwartz? Do you want to have something the there's a final landscape plan reviewed and approved? Which shall include the preservation of the currently existing tree so long as it's in healthy condition?
Yeah.
Does that work?
That'd be fine.
Okay. Everyone okay with that? All right. Your motion, anything else, folks? Okay. We have a motion by Councilor Schwartz, subject to second call, all in favor of approval. I've got 5 in favor, none opposed. Thank you, Mr. Sachs. I think you can explain to your clients what our process is. It'll be taken up on the 19th. Please make sure you communicate probably with Mr. Cronin about this issue of the survey.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. Good luck, folks. Okay, next, 130-17, special permit to exceed FAR at 164 Highland Avenue. This is... to increase the FAR to 0.28 where 0.27 is allowed in Ward 2. It's a two-story rear addition, an attached garage for more than 3 vehicles. Good evening, sir.
Good evening. I'm Alan Mayer, the architect for Cindy and Bob Lockray. And they've been working on this house since they bought it in 2008 and have been restoring it. We've been working on the worked on the main section of the house, and there's currently a small room in the back. It's a mansard, and which we are going to be taking down, and we have approval from Historic already, and we are going to be adding a family room to the back of the house, mudroom, and then we're also, there's a detached garage, which we'll be taking down, or proposing that we'll be taking down, and the garage that we're proposing to put in its place, which would be attached, has two features that bring us before you. One is that there is a basement in the garage. There will be lifts installed. In that basement of the garage, there's room for an additional 4 spaces, but they are completely underground and will not be seen. And therefore, technically, it is more than three cars and more than 700 square feet of garage, although visually it is only two. And the other issue that the garage triggered is that because we were trying to keep the mansard style with the proposed garage, the square footage of the floor above the garage puts us slightly over the FAR from the point by 0.1. So it's a 0.28 instead of 0.27. And we'll also be rebuilding the front porch, but that's not in question.
Okay. Planning, Mr. Cronin, you want to, anything of particular note here?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would just note that it is, and as Mr. Mayor said, an increase in FAR and a garage greater than 700 square feet and a garage accommodating more than three vehicles.
So if I could just, Mr. Mayor, if I could just ask, so I understand logistics, there will be 2 bays, is that correct?
2 bays.
And one would drive into the bay and then use some kind of lift device to literally lower the car to a lower level.
Yes.
And that would all be an internal process within the garage itself?
Correct.
And not, so there's only 2 bays visible from the street?
That is correct.
Okay. All right. No need to ask what these are for. That's although I'm sure there's some curiosity that's been piqued, but I don't know.
They don't have the cars yet, but...
Pardon?
They don't have the 4 cars yet, but
okay.
It's the dream, you know. We're all living the dream.
And it works logistically in terms of being able to move these vehicles in and out appropriately?
Yes.
Okay. Fine. Is there any member of the public who wishes to be heard on this petition? All right. Yes, sir. Come on up, please. Good evening.
Hi. Good evening, Councilors. I'm Kenneth Mack. I live at 171 Highland Avenue.
Your name again, sir? I'm sorry.
Kenneth Mack.
Okay.
171 Highland Avenue, directly across the street from 164 Highland Avenue. We have several concerns and questions about the project. First, I note that it exceeds the maximums by right, some of them quite substantially. 3-car maximum by right, this is going to be a 6-car garage. 700 square foot garage by right, this is going to be more than 1,500 square foot garage, more than doubling. And the VR of the FAR is going to increase from 0.19 to 0.27, adding approximately more than 2,000 square feet to the house. We have a bunch of questions and concerns. I'm going to try to list them concisely. One is just why does a single family house need a 6-car garage with a car lift with 2 automobile elevators that store 4 cars underground? We're not aware of anything like this in the neighborhood. Even though they're stored underground, it would seem to be quite out of place. I would note that there are quite large houses in the neighborhood. I'm not aware of anybody with anything remotely resembling this kind of structure. We wonder, you know, given the structure, how many people are going to occupy the house. It's supposed to be a single-family house. We're wondering why, whether there were alternatives considered. They're going to exceed the 0.27 FAR. Why isn't there an alternative that meets the 2.7 FAR, and why is that not feasible for a single-family house? Same with the garage. Why are those alternatives not feasible, particularly since the garage more than twice exceeds what's allowable? And more specifically, we noticed the residential area. Children play in the streets there. Our kids play in the streets. I've almost had automobile accidents coming out of my driveway. It's a very narrow street, cut-through street, and there apparently is going to be room for 6 cars to come in and out of this driveway for a single-family house, which is unlike anything else in the neighborhood. So again, we wonder why alternatives first considered. Why are they not feasible if it's a single-family house, both in terms of the FAR and in terms of the six-car garage with the two automobile elevators and the four vehicles stored in the basement, meaning not in keeping with the neighborhood. And we worry about traffic, the use that's going to be made of the proposed garage bays, and possible danger to both drivers exiting driveways and children, our kids bike down the street to work. And I wonder about six cars coming out of a driveway directly across the street from my house. Thanks.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Mayor, have you talked to the neighbors about this project or your clients?
No.
All right. If you just come up, please, ma'am.
I can just answer the question about the cars.
Your name?
Cindy Lotte, owner. My husband has just recently become sort of a car collector, and the cars that he's talking about are really just for storage, so it's not the cars that are going to be driven all the time. We just wanted a place on our property where we can store cars during the winter.
Just as a general note, we encourage people who come before us who are petitioning for any kind of relief to have a chat with their neighbors. We find that, I think the experience of the people, and I'm not suggesting that you need to do that, it's not a requirement, but I'm sure our planning department mentioned that we encourage that because a lot of times people come out to a hearing like this, they're concerned about something, they may have legitimate concerns, and the concerns may be simply because nobody's talked to them. So we think that's really important, and I'm going to urge, it's up to the committee whether it decides to act on this tonight, but regardless, I'm going to really suggest that you and your architect talk to your neighbors about what you're planning. Things tend to go a little more smoothly that way.
Okay. And it's just going to be our family. There's not going to be more than
four. I hear that. Just as a suggestion. Ma'am, do you want to come up and make a public comment? Come on up, please, and I'll take any other public comment. Good evening.
Hi, I'm Lisa Jones. I live at 171 Highland Avenue, directly across the street. So my questions were about the appropriateness of the six-car garage in the neighborhood and, you know, what do you expect for the use of the vehicles. I was concerned about, you know, how often they would be coming and going from the driveway, and it seems a little bit out of proportion to what are very, you know, Victorian-type homes, on that street. It's a very quaint area. I didn't, want to disrupt what we have there. And as a neighbor that lives across the street, I was kind of surprised to find out about it. I know that I'm not required to, but I find out about it from a petition sign. So.
You should have received notice, did you not, ma'am?
No, I received notice from you, but I'm saying as a neighbor,
okay.
It's all news to me, so this is a good place for me to find out what's going on in my neighborhood.
Appreciate that, ma'am. Okay, is there any other member of the public who wishes to speak at this time? Comments or yes, Mr. Mayor, come on up.
I apologize for the lack of communication with the neighbors. I did want to just explain that the way this garage works is it looks like a two-car garage. And in order to, so you can't get six cars in and out in a normal way. You have to actually take the car that is normally parked there, move it out, and then the other car can come up slowly up a lift. So it's not, it doesn't allow for more people to be driving in at the same time because as I said, first of all, these are going to be, specialty cars that will be taken out for a ride at one time or another. But the in and out, as opposed to a standard three or four car garage that we see where there's four cars across that have easy access in and out, this is not what we're proposing. And specifically designed this so that it would fit within the neighborhood, and that it would look from the outside and act from the outside exactly like a two-car garage, but that there would be room for the client to store specialty cars on site. And it is not something that is, it will take a little bit of time to
get it out.
Mr. Mayor, let's appreciate that. Let's try to avoid the direct back and forth with the neighbors. Councilor Crosby, you had a question, and then I'm going to Councilor Auchincloss.
Well, first of all, I wonder if we have any slides that we can put up to show the neighborhood what this looks like. Has the neighborhood seen the drawings?
No, I don't think so. I think that's the point. They haven't talked to the neighbors at all.
Oh, do we have the drawing? There we go. I mean, has the neighborhood seen this drawing, for example? That's what it's going to look like from the street. And I have to say that although, I'll give an opinion, I'll make a comment. I mean, I thought that the presentation that you gave us was crystal clear, except it took me a bit of time to figure out that there was no way to get into this basement. I was looking for another way in and thinking, what the heck are they doing here? And I just saw this double line, and I figured you must have lifts. So the driveway, in fact, only one car can go up and down the driveway at a time because it's going to be a smaller in width driveway than normal driveways and widen only to get to the two-car garage that you see. So that's great. So you have the side view. Could you show the side view again? So as I understand it, what you don't show on your drawings, which might have been actually helpful, is that below this garage and extending into the back of the property is a basement where you drop these cars. So somebody's working on these cars in the basement, or just, you know, they're just for show, like a car museum. Okay.
Well, I think the operative thing is here that there's a limited amount of way to get in and out, and they're hidden from view.
Right. So to me, the work that you've done, although it's extensive and you're replacing a lot of building with a lot of building, it's perfectly in keeping with the Victorian style of the house. Exceptionally well done. I wanted to say one more thing. Somebody mentioned a couple of thousand extra square feet, and actually the project is only 222 square feet over the allowable FAR.
Right. It's bigger than what's there now, but it's only 200 plus square feet over what would be allowed as a matter of right.
Right. Right.
Okay.
Just so that the folks understand. Okay. I thought this was a simple thing to move forward, but
I'll hear from Councillor Cody.
Neighbors need to hear more. I understand that.
I'm with Councillor Cody.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I just want to help the neighbors out a little bit here. The profession of the owner, what is the collection of, do they sell buy sell collectible cars?
I don't think that's an appropriate source of our
if the seat is any kind of a commercial use as far as...
Well, I think we can condition that there's going to be absolutely no commercial use on the parcel, and I think that would be very appropriate.
If I was trying to help the neighbors, I'd be concerned about that if I was a neighbor saying, well, they're going to buy sell cars that would come and go.
They could not do that without an auto dealer license, and I think we could certainly restrict... I mean, yes, a casual one-time sale, sure, anybody can do that, but if they're using it for display there and running a business out of there, that would be a very problematic. And I think, Councilor Cody, we could specifically condition the board order so there's no issue of that at all. Okay? No, it's very fair. My Councilor Auchincloss, do you want to... No, I'm not. I appreciate actually. Thank you very much for talking to your constituents. Do you want to hold this item?
I do. I think it would be too helpful. Well, one question and one comment.
Sure.
That's all right,
please,
Mr. Chair. One question that the neighbors have brought up that actually now I'm realizing I have too. If you want to pull a car on the basement floor up, does that require that you then exit out all five other cars, just the two cars on the ground floor, or just the one car on the ground floor?
On the ground floor first. Depends on which car you want to take out.
Sure.
So if you want, normally you would take one car off the ground floor, and then you would bring the car below it up.
Would that car on the basement floor have to be taken out all the way to the street, or just left in the driveway to... Okay, so I think the concern from the neighbors was that potentially you'd have five cars constantly getting shuffled out into the street, but it sounds like that's not going to happen. Okay. Second comment, and it really is a comment because I don't myself have a good answer for it, is, I mean, this special permit goes with the land, right? So who's the next buyer of this property and what are they going to be using it for? Because this is a highly bespoke use, right? So is the next buyer going to, I think that's something to consider.
I mean, the next buyer may very well come in and say, I don't want this, or is it going to be particularly attractive to someone who collects cars? They're going to be, I think what we should do, Councillor Auchincloss, is when we craft the board order, try to make it very clear that we see ahead, so that as Councillor Cody expressed, we expressly bar any commercial use, and we try to put in anything else that we might need to restrict the ability or potential problems that some other homeowner may cause. I think that might be, we could do that by conditioning that the lift shall remain in operation so that it, one car can come up at one time. I think we can have some creativity there.
Do we want to take a crack at crafting this order tonight then?
No. I would prefer that I want the neighbors to have an opportunity, if we could, to talk with the petitioner to explain one-on-one exactly what's going on. But what I'd like then is for the planning department to maybe, and our legal counsel to work with the petitioner to craft some language to deal with the future. In other words, I think what we're trying to say is, okay, you can have that six-car garage, but you have to maintain a lift system similar to the one you're designing so that you're not creating essentially some way that you could have six cars on the parcel. Does that make sense? And I think we can probably craft that language appropriately. Councillor Schwartz?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would agree that this needs to, I would be in support of holding this. You know, I think that for the reasons that you mentioned, as well as some of the questions that Councillor Auchincloss had, I have, I guess, two basic questions. One is, with such a large lot, I think that the question that was raised by the neighbor as to why go to 0.28 rather than 0.27, why need that extra relief? I'm a little surprised that we need to be giving special relief for 220 more square feet when you have so much flexibility right now while you're designing this. So that would be one question that would affect my readiness to give that relief or vote for that relief. Secondly, I think that the concerns that have been raised by the neighbors are very relevant to our discussion. When you look at the items, significant issues for consideration, they specifically, we have these all the time, but in this is definitely raised by the garage and the six cars, that it's an appropriate location for the garage, accommodating more than three vehicles, proposed residence and garage as developed and operated will not adversely affect the neighborhood, so the concerns about the kids in the street and things, there'll be no nuisance or serious hazard to vehicles or pedestrians, and that access is appropriate to the type and numbers of the vehicles. So I think it's very relevant for us to be talking about. I think that it would be very relevant, and I don't know if we can do this. I know it runs with the land, but in other types of uses, sometimes we require a new special permit to come when a use changes. I know this is a residential use, but with the storage component of this, I guess my question for legal would be whether there's any ability for us to condition the permit that we're giving now for this particular envisioned use to expire with the ownership change, requiring them to come back.
I'm not sure we can do that, Councilor.
I'm not sure either. I'm asking that question.
But I think what we could do along those lines is make the special permit stringent enough so that it allows for what is designed, but nothing else. In other words, prevent a future owner from saying, well, I've got a special permit to operate a six-car garage here, and I'm going to configure it completely differently. Would that alleviate some of your concerns?
Some, but not all, because I think in particular what's been presented to us and represented to us by the petitioner is that these cars are not really daily kind of commuting cars. They're not cars that they're planning to use on a regular basis. They're using them kind of as a
they're storing them, and then they're going to bring them out occasionally for, you know, leisure, which certainly is different from, you can imagine somebody having four grown children who have their own cars, and they all six drivers in the household come and go every day, over the streets, in the neighborhood, using the lifts. So I understand what you're saying, that if we are limited, we can't do a kind of required re-up, if there's a change in the ownership, then we can fall back to something like that. But I want to explore that. The other question I have is about the lift operation. Is it an electrical lift? Is it gas? Is it going to be something that makes noise or other types of pollution when it's used? Just the microphone, please.
Hydraulic.
It's a hydraulic lift. Okay, and what powers that?
Electric.
A foot pump or?
No, electric.
Electric.
Electricity powers a hydraulic lift.
You know, we're not back in the 18th century, right. Councilor Schwartz.
We have the cranks.
No, I know, you know, hydraulics are very powerful, but something has to drive the actual
right. Electricity.
So electricity. So that's, I mean, it's a pretty standard, I mean,
they use these in, yeah, I mean, they use these for,
but they're quiet. So
they're quieter than a lawnmower. They're quieter than...
I hope it's quieter than a leaf blower.
It's much quieter than a leaf blower. It's like an elevator. I mean, it's just an elevator, a pneumatic one-story thing, and they use these lots of, in New York and San Francisco, and lots of garages where you have to stack cars. They do these.
New York City has a lot of these.
Yeah, lots of them.
Well, I grew up in New York City.
No, I know you
very familiar with that.
Boston has some in Boston as well.
They're not silent, but so.
I don't mean to jest. I think it's a very fair concern, so please go ahead.
Okay. I mean, we just had some permit that people were very concerned about the stone cutting, even though it was inside and underwater. And, you know, obviously, the doors can be open when these are being used. I just think that it's important to at least have that concern addressed.
Can I make a suggestion there? When you come back or before the next meeting, if you can get some information about the amount of noise decimal level that the hydraulic lift emanates,
sure.
Would that help Councilor Schwartz if we had some manufacturer's literature or something else that would give us some information that we could guide our discussion on?
I know that we sent the manufacturer's literature to the planning department at their request.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I don't mean to be quibbling, but this is relief that's being requested, so I think it's appropriate for the petitioner, if they're asking for relief, to address some of the concerns that have been raised.
No, I don't mean to jest at all. I think, let's be clear what we're asking for so we can make sure that you accomplish it.
Yep.
One is to provide some information to the planning department about the noise level. I think second, Councilor Schwartz, you are asking the legal department to either figure out a way it could run just with this current owner, or if we can't do that, how we craft some language in a board order so it's very clear that the use doesn't change from the way it's proposed currently. Is that the gist of what you're getting at?
As always, you put it better than I did, yes.
I don't know if I did. I'm just trying to make sure I understood it. Councilor Crosley?
Thank you. So this might be an odd question, but I'm going to ask of WIDA. I actually wondered from the beginning, and I wasn't going to bring it up, but I'm wondering what, besides the FAR, what triggered the bigger than 700 square foot garage? And here's why I'm asking. I mean, the entirety of the excess of the garage is completely underground. It's not counting toward FAR. It's simply a basement, and there's some mechanical equipment in there that we don't usually see, but we don't usually see what's inside a building. So this is, I'm intrigued by this, and I'm wondering, is it because, and there's not a statement of intent on the garage ordinance either that suggests why is it we normally limit to 700 square feet, but my guess would be that that had to do with having a larger than 700 square foot three-door mass on a residential site. So I'm just really wondering how this is coming to us and how this is coming to us under that provision.
if I could, actually the 700 square feet and the three-car maximum absent a special permit in a residential district even predates me, which is really old. But it's my understanding and how it's been applied in all the times I've been here is that it was really geared towards commercial activity and in particular landscapers in West Newton.
As far as the history of things in the zoning code, it's a fair point, Councillor Crosley, but...
So I just want to make an observation, too, because it wasn't long ago that we had a project before us that was asking for, I believe, 5 or 6, on one site in a couple of different buildings, and we did finally approve that. And that was a different location, you know, and the location matters. But there definitely were going to be vehicles in and out of all of those.
That's why it's special permit.
I understand that.
We're just.
But I just think we ought to be thinking about past experiences and drawing consistency when there is consistency, but thinking about the relative terms of each.
My guess is a fair observation. My strong guess is we've had very few hydraulic lifts. Type petitions, particularly in residential in the city, which is why we haven't grappled with this. Councillor Lipoff, whom I neglected to introduce before, Councillor Rick Lipoff, Councillor Large from Ward 8, member of the committee.
Sorry for my tardiness. I'll draw off of that and say that other one, I can't remember the address, but it was a family with a bunch of kids. And they
it was in Auburndale.
It was in Auburndale, and it was 5 or 6.
1200 Commonwealth Avenue.
And because of the because of the situation on the corner, screening, all of those things, we allowed that. Still 6 cars coming and going. This is a situation where 4 of those cars are behind other cars and 2 of them are down, I think. All four are down. And to get them out is not something that's going to be done every single day. It truly signifies storage as compared to that other situation, that those cars, those garages were being built so we could take them off into storage, but still were being used. So, you know, I think this is a clever design. I think it's a design that nobody's going to know, except everybody in this room, that there's more than 2 cars there. I came in a little late, but I heard safety issues from a neighbor. Clearly, there's no safety issue here with 6 cars coming and going every day. I'm sad to hear that the neighbors weren't let in on this earlier. It would have made the whole process easier. Those are my thoughts.
Councillor Schwartz, I'm going to ask that we not engage in a lengthy debate tonight. We have several more items to get to.
So I was just going to add, I feel compelled just to, I remember that very, very well, the discussion about that garage, and notwithstanding the very, I think, appropriate nature of this particular design, with the questions I hope that'll be answered, that I anticipate won't be a problem. The previous property that we're talking about, I remember specifically us having the discussion about both how frequently those cars are going to be coming and going, and the family was going to be out of town 6 months out of the 12, and it was going to be during the summer that they're going to be around, but the rest of they were going to be storing their cars in there, so it was the same storage issue. And I remember specifically us talking about whether it was going to be precedential or not, and we specifically said that every special permit stands on its own merits. So I just think we should keep that.
Okay. We are going to postpone this. Ms. Khan, the 22nd, or is that reasonable at this point? All right. Are you available the 22nd of June?
Absolutely.
Okay. We're going to postpone it. I'm going to take a motion the second to postpone it. I am going to urge you to get that information to the planning department we talked about and to sit and talk with the neighbors who are here and any other immediate neighbors. It will just make this process go a lot smoother. If you have the conversation, I think you can hopefully alleviate a lot of concerns. And if there's something that they request and that you can accommodate, let us know and we can try to put that in a board order as well. Okay? So I'm going to entertain a motion to hold this item by Councillor Auchincloss. All in favor of hold. I've got 6 in favor, none opposed. The item is held. June 22nd, we'll take it up again. Okay? Thank you very much, folks. Okay, next, 131-17, a special permit to allow a parking stall on the front setback at 54 Lakewood Road. Carol and Jenko, this is in Ward 6. Are you Ms. Jenko?
No, Pastor Susan Sangiello, Landscape Architect.
How are you, Ms. Sangiello?
Mrs. Jenko is here tonight. I'm good. This project, I'm going to take your advice and keep this short and simple. When Ms. Jenko bought this property in 2005, the entire front yard was a parking area that sloped with riprap from the front porch down to the parking area with no access to the front yard, to the front door except around the side yard. At that time, she was a single mom, one car, active children, and a yard was much more important to her than this large parking area in the front. So the parking area was removed so that her only parking space was to access of a legal right-of-way, the neighbor's driveway, 8-foot-wide driveway, to the backyard where there was a small single parking space. So that was in 2007 when that was removed and the other parking space became her primary parking. Back in the spring of this year, we did a design for allowing a new parking space in the front yard, and the water line was replaced. So we got on the docket for the water line replacement, got our trenching permits, sidewalk crossing permits, and went to get the new curb cut because the curb cut had been removed when the parking was taken out. And at that point, we're told we need you to have a surveyor do the calculations to make sure we don't exceed the 4% new hardscape. So we did that, came back again, and then they were said, well, no, you don't conform to the zoning because you need that 5-foot setback. I had reviewed the zoning, and the DRC meeting discussed at that point that section 517, there's a little bit of a conflict in there with the wording, and the area in particular is where it says one parking space may be located in the street and within a street setback distance. However, in no case shall a parking space be set back less than 5 feet from the street. It doesn't say property line. It doesn't say right of way. It says the street. And then it goes on further with a small diagram that has the property lines delineated, and those fall right within the no parking stall 5-foot setback. So there was a discussion at that meeting that this is a little bit misleading. Even though I understand ISD interprets it differently, it really is something that should be cleaned up in the zoning ordinance because we thought we conformed to all the criteria with our 9x19 parking space that were told differently. So from there, we had gone ahead and we didn't need a permit to do the retaining wall to allow the parking space. So that's actually been constructed. And in the meantime, we've done some studies and found that we could, by right, do an angled parking space with this same wall delineation, but it would require at least an 18-foot-wide curb cut to be able to access it, and also an additional 200 square feet of paving. So in the DRC meeting, that was discussed and was decided that we should probably pursue the special permit because it's a much nicer design. It fits better within the site, which is only 44 feet wide, and the front porch is only 23 feet from the street. So the one comment that was made from in the planning opinion was that maybe we could modify the retaining wall somewhat so that we could gain more space. Well, that's problematic because we have the footings for the front porch and didn't want to get into the structural integrity of doing anything to those. So we have a wall 3 feet from the front porch, which keeps us away from the 2-foot footing that's 48 inches deep. The other thing that we actually had looked at things like that, it would require us to completely rebuild that end of the porch, and it would also create a 4-foot grade change, which would then require railings and a complete modification of the porch, where we just wanted a simple way to make the 2.5-foot grade change and get a parking space in there. So that's kind of where we are today. I don't think that the other problem with doing that is that basically the front right corner of the porch would be sort of suspended from a wall.
Let me get this straight. The porch is a new construction?
No, the porch is existing. We didn't want to have to go into modifying all the footings in the structure.
The porch exists currently, and the current parking, there's one parking space on site currently?
There is one parking space on the site, but it's in the backyard.
So you share, there's a shared driveway, and you angle into that rear parking space, is that right?
Correct. And you access it through the neighbor's driveway, which is 8 feet wide. It's a legal right-of-way, which gets tight because if you look at the site plan, at 50 Lakewood, and the neighbors are actually here tonight also, they have a garage, and they park their cars in the garage. So it gets a little tight back in the back when there are 3 cars in that area. And basically, Carolyn would really like a parking space dedicated on her property that doesn't have to be accessed through the neighbor's property.
I think at least I understand the issue. Ma'am, do you want to add something to that?
Sure, I'd like to add something. Unlike the petition...
Your name, please.
My name is Caroline Jenkel. I'm the owner of 54 Lakewood Road. I want to add something here. As opposed to the previous petition, who were looking for 6 parking spots and a garage, I don't have a garage. I don't have a driveway. I have to use a shared-use driveway that has to be plowed by my neighbors. If I need to go to work, they have to plow that driveway for me to get out. I'm simply looking for one spot to park my car. I'm a single working mother, and I need to be able to get in and out of my house and park in front of my house.
Okay. All right, thank you. All right. Planning, do you want to give us anything that you have concerns about?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As Ms. Angiolo said, this is a special permit to locate parking within 5 feet of the street. As indicated in the memo, the planning department had concern that a large vehicle may encroach on the sidewalk, although Ms. Angiolo did state that the stall as proposed would be a full dimensionally compliant stall at 9 by 19 feet.
So when you say encroach, it's going to be a 9 by 19 foot stall?
Correct.
And that will be cleared of the sidewalk. The vehicle parking will not edge out onto the sidewalk.
Well, we're asking for relief for the, which I'm still not really clear about. But supposedly there's an additional 5 feet in addition to the 9 by 19 feet that's required.
So I just want to understand. You're seeking relief from the 5 feet.
Correct.
So how? Measuring the end of the stall, the end of the 19 feet, how many feet between the end of the stall and the sidewalk?
It's at the sidewalk, 9 by 9. The 19 is at the
literally sidewalk. At the sidewalk?
Well, a few inches here or there, yes. But then the sidewalk...
Oh, no,
but I think you're asking.
You stand up a few inches here or there.
Yes.
Is the 19 feet going into the sidewalk or not?
No, it's completely within her property.
Okay, but it's within inches of the sidewalk edge,
it's
right?
It's close, yes.
Okay. Okay, I'm going to take public comment for a moment first. Is there any member of the public who wishes to speak? Come on up, please, ma'am. Thank you, Ms. Angiolo.
I'm Judy Fisher. My husband, Arthur, and I are the people who share the driveway with Caroline Jenko, and we've been sharing it for a long time. And with the new construction that you did in the front, I think it will offer great relief to us because it's very, very difficult to manage this from a living point of view, and as Caroline pointed out. In addition, the house is on the other side. I don't know the number on Barbara's side.
Yes.
The house on the other side has a parking area that comes quite far down, that has always existed, so I think that this will not look really any different.
and it does not appear from the new landscaping that the car is going to hang off into the trees. And we think in terms of neighborliness, it'll be a great
place. And ma'am, you don't have to, is there an easement currently that allows them to use your, utilize your driveway to access the, their her property?
Yes. It's a legal right of way.
Legal right of way, and I presume that's going to stay the same no matter
what.
That
stays the same.
Okay.
And we have two cars.
Just want to understand what we're getting at here. Okay, great. Thank you, ma'am. Okay. Is there any other member of the public? Yes, sir. Come on up, please. Good evening.
Thank you. My name is John Ciferiatis. I live at 51 Lakewood Road, directly across from 51 Lakewood Road, directly across from 54 Lakewood Road. Appreciate the opportunity to address the Land Use Committee on this issue. There are many reasons why I am opposed to this application. First and foremost is safety. As the discussion was teetering on, is this really 19 feet, is it kind of close to the sidewalk? Gentlemen, this is taking the 5-foot setback down to zero. The retaining wall was specifically built so that it allows only 19 feet to the edge of the sidewalk. Anyone who thinks of parking in front of a stone wall is not going to park and touch the stone wall. They're going to be at least a foot or two away. So, in my opinion, there will be an overhang into the sidewalk. And this permit goes with the property, not the owner. So the owner may say, I'm just going to drive a small car, but this goes into the future. The permit goes with the land. This sidewalk area is heavily traveled by families and children going to Crystal Lake. We're very fortunate to live next to the lake, one block away. We've got people walk across Walnut Street from the other side of Walnut, back and forth, especially in the summertime with their kids. Having any kind of obstruction to that passageway, I believe is a safety hazard. The other matter gets to be a little bit more technical in terms of the application itself. The plot plan does not reflect existing conditions. The plot plan is dated April 3rd. What you're seeing in that photograph was done about a month ago. So for you to make a proper assessment, dimensionally, and let's face it, we're dealing with inches. We should have a plot plan that specifically measures out where that retaining wall really is in relationship to the sidewalk. That plot, again, is dated April 3rd. It should be at least updated to have this discussion and review meaningful. I've heard no discussion about a side lot setback. I'm kind of a novice at this, so maybe that doesn't apply here. But in reading the zoning law, apparently there's also a side lot setback required for parking. I haven't heard any mention of that here. And I'd like to get some feedback from the planning department in terms of the applicability of that. The next item is aesthetic. I have to look at this when I walk out my front door, and this lot is non-conforming from the get-go. Okay, there's been all sorts of accommodations made with the neighbors for this right-of-way for them to enjoy some kind of relief for parking in the backyard. But nevertheless, this is basically a 44-foot wide frontage with a 12-foot curb cut. So essentially, the frontage of the house is a quarter asphalt curb cut. Okay. So, I'll just summarize on those points. It's safety, the technical issues of the application. We don't have really good dimensions to go by here. The setback, really, you're looking at a zero setback and maybe even a negative setback for any kind of vehicle that parks there. No one's going to go right up to that stone wall. They're going to be at least a foot away unless they want to keep fixing their car. So I believe there will be encroachment on the sidewalk, a safety issue to neighbors crossing over to Crystal Lake. And the aesthetic, as far as I'm concerned, is not a benefit to the neighborhood. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Any other member of the public wish to speak at this time? All right, seeing none, I'm going to entertain a motion to close the public hearing. Councilor Schwartz, motion to close the public hearing. All in favor of closing the public hearing? 6 in favor, none opposed. The public hearing is closed. Do colleagues have comments or questions? Go ahead, Councilor Schwartz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do think that I'd like to try to get some answers from both legal and planning just to those particular questions that were raised by the neighbor, because I was made aware of those questions as well by email, and I think they're legitimate questions. I think that just to answer this issue, though, about the site plan, you might not be aware of this, sir, but we are looking at a memo that actually has an updated diagram in the memo that you might have seen online, but that does have the dimensions and the wall. It's pretty small. It's very small, but it's visible. And I've been scrutinizing it because it is what we have, and it does help us kind of understand the challenges.
This one here?
It's on page 3 of 4 in the memo.
That one says existing conditions. I'm going to look. That's the new one with the retaining wall.
Yeah, it's also in the packet that's
mm-hmm.
true.
I see it.
So, but on the side setback, in I think parking the side setback is allowed, if I'm not mistaken. So that I know
it's
that
not the side setback. You're correct. It's not the side setback.
That was a separate question that was raised, and I just want to also answer that question. It is allowed in the side setback, so that's not an issue. I think as has been stated. Unless legal has anything more on this, I mean, the definition of the setback, where does it start? Where does it apply? I mean, is it from the street or is it from the edge of the sidewalk?
Edge of the sidewalk, that's consistently.
The definition of street includes the entire layout, which is the sidewalk as well. So it's not just what you think of as a street. The street is defined as the entire public way, which includes the sidewalk.
So you need 5 feet from the edge of your lot line to the back of your car?
Yes.
So this is definitely a situation where it needs relief because there's no, not even close.
Well, also, the front setback of the house is 23 feet. So you could,
not with the retaining wall, it isn't.
Pardon?
Not with the retaining wall, it isn't.
No, but even so, if you were to pull, you don't have that 24-foot dimension, even if you did pull straight in. There is an alternative plan that we could do by right, and I've got it on a disc if you'd like to take a look at it.
Can I ask one thing before we look at that?
Please.
I was just going to ask this of the petitioner. Did you have any discussions with the neighbor to the right? As you pointed out, there's a parking stall there. It looks like, I know the porch gets in the way, but if you were just a little bit off over the line with that neighbor, you'd be able to pull straight in up next to your house instead of...
So before I started this project, I brought my neighbors to the left and to the right to my house, and we went over the plans, and they were both in favor. I also discussed with my neighbor to the right, that house is actually on Walnut Street, if you would consider selling me some property. And
slimmer.
If you look at that property, it's falling apart. And when I moved in, I cleaned up the yard. I took down the fence. There was an old boat there. I took that down. I mow this woman's lawn. She's basically disabled. She lives by herself in this old house that it should actually be condemned. And since I moved in, I've been cleaning the property up for her. We've taken trees down. I can't tell you. I would encourage all of you to look at this property when I purchased it and what I've done. I really would. And I did have conversations. With my neighbor who is here.
Sam?
Had conversations with all my neighbors. Unlike the previous petitioner, with all my neighbors.
Ma'am, I appreciate that, and we appreciate it. We have a legal task here, okay? we are not sitting as we are sitting in what's called a quasi-judicial capacity, which means we have to act like judges. We have to apply the law to the facts as we see it. We get some discretion, which is what special permitting is about. We appreciate very much your good faith and your efforts, but we are being asked to consider whether or not allowing this parking stall in the front setback with the dimensions that we're given is appropriate not only for your interest but for the general interest of the public. So I think Councilor Schwartz's question to you was, have you approached your neighbor about potentially buying that piece of land? And I understand, given the state of the neighbor, that's not a discussion that's gone anywhere.
I've had multiple discussions with that neighbor, and she said no.
And you're not under an obligation to buy, and she's not under an obligation to sell, but I think we just want to know what the alternatives were.
Can you open that up? Can you get it? Okay.
You know,
the first image is what the property looked like when Ms. Jenko bought it. And you'll see the entire front yard was a parking lot.
But we're faced, I appreciate that, but our task is whether to allow this parking stall with this set of conditions. So, Councilor Carter, then Crosley.
I just had, Mr. Chair, one comment for our colleagues here, that we had one of these come up recently, and the reason why we turned it down was because of the closeness to the house. We don't have that situation here, so I can kind of see where it's a street sidewalk issue, but I don't view that as critical as we had that situation with being up against the house structure, the structure. So I don't have a big issue with this. The retaining wall thing, I think, kind of highlights. I only get concerned about snow and ice, like, and how that works with the coming in and out.
I'll put my two cents in, and then we'll get to Councilor Crosley. I do have, I think it's a legitimate concern that if you have a stall that's 19 feet of length, but it runs into a retaining wall, in the winter there's going to be snow, there's going to be ice, there is going to be an issue, and I am very concerned of a car literally parking at sidewalk. I think that presents some safety concerns. I need to think that through, quite frankly. Councilor Crosley, it looks like you differ, which is fine.
Of course I often do, but we're
good colleagues.
So remember the project we saw a month ago or so, and we actually spent a long time discussing whether there was any way we could accommodate this person. And they had a narrower lot, and the house was closer to the street. And the two spaces they were trying to provide, they had no spaces. The two spaces they were trying to provide were 13 feet deep and 15 feet deep to the right-of-way, to the property line. This, on the other hand, we have permitted stuff like this in the past. This is a full-size parking space. Very few cars are actually 19 feet long. Now, I have an unusually short car, most compact cars are, or small SUVs are about 16 feet, 17 feet. They're not normally a full 19 feet long. The retaining wall, as you can see here, is 3 feet high. Of course, you're not going to go in and hit the retaining wall, but, I think this is a different situation, and there's only one parking space on this site right now for this house, which is non-conforming, as we know. A house of this, well, any house right now, which might not be the right thing for us to do in the future, but any house right now requires two off-street parking spaces. I think what the petitioner is trying to do, and we may need to adjust the plan here, what the petitioner is trying to do is create a landscape here that's attractive and allow for an off-street parking space. And I also want to say that, it must be frustrating to petitioners. They did submit documents to us that are fully dimensioned and show the before and after conditions and so forth. And I think it would be right, and there's one drawing there, but it would be right of us to take a look at the actual conditions since they've gone to the trouble of
photographing them and so forth. And it might help the
neighbors. And the original conditions
well.
When they moved in?
Excuse me?
The original conditions when they moved
before
in?
Before and after conditions. Whatever they have to show us.
The very first...
You're welcome to show it to us.
That one. That's what it looked like. It was the whole front yard was a parking area. There were no steps to the front door. There was no pedestrian access at all. You had to walk out to the road and up and around to get there. And the entire front apron was an asphalt curb, the entire length of that. We're asking for a 12-foot wide curb cut and a 13-foot wide paver driveway. It's not asphalt. It's a paver driveway.
So can I have a question. I purchased this property like this, so how is this allowed in 2005? I have a deed on this property. I purchased it like this.
My guess, and it's just a guess, is that the way you could park there was so you didn't, there was considered a stall that was off of 5 feet from the setback.
So
and I don't know.
If you can scroll down, you can see that there is a, keep going.
Can I ask a question? When was the retaining wall constructed?
The retaining wall was constructed when the water line was.
Which was when?
It's
about April, end of April.
This year?
Yes, this year.
So you constructed the retaining wall. Were you contemplating putting the parking stall in at that time?
Yes.
And did you at that time realize you needed a special permit? Well, you reviewed it because you reviewed it and thought the street was the street, not the sidewalk, right?
But normally, you would refer to it as the right-of-way, which includes the street, the planting strip, and the sidewalk.
I'm not going to fault anyone for how they read our zoning ordinance, but I do think it's fair to say that our zoning ordinance is consistently, as Ms. Young has reminded us, been read to include sidewalks and streets in the term street. I'll tell you, I'm having an issue here. You're coming in, you're seeking relief a month and a half after having built a retaining wall that makes this parking stall smaller. And without this retaining wall, the parking stall could be further back.
The original porch.
You're saying that you could not do anything to make this parking stall larger if you took the retaining wall out here? Go ahead. Let me go to Councilor Schwartz first, then I'm going to go to you, Councilor Clausen, and then Councilor Cody.
Well, before I make my comment, I think because I'm not an architect, I'd leave it to Councilor Crossley. But my quick comment was, I think with the retaining wall, there needs to be some kind of retaining wall there. So I don't know if we're going to get very far with this line of inquiry. My next question was going to be, there was comment of an alternate design. I was looking forward to seeing that, but I'll defer to, if I was mistaken, maybe there can't be.
No, you're on the right track. The drawing shows very clearly that the structure is 23 foot 2 inches back from the front property line. They require 24 feet to have the 19 feet plus the 5 feet.
I understand
which we may waive, and we have waived in the past. If they need a retaining wall, which they do to deal with the grade, the retaining wall is going to come out in front of the porch anyway. the only way they can put a parking in here by right is if they come in sideways and park in front of the house.
Let me ask you this. What was there for the to adapt the grade change prior to the retaining wall?
That riprap slope, originally.
So it was sloped.
Correct.
You put a retaining wall in place of the slope.
You had riprap?
The first thing is there was riprap. There was not parking was removed, it became just a lawn area. It was still being lawn and the walk.
Do folks know what riprap is?
I would like to be educated.
Okay, it's about a
stone
wall. Right.
All right, but the stone wall was taken out.
In 2007.
Okay, and after that. I'm just sharing my concern here. I understand, and I'm not an engineer, that you need some type of retaining wall there to do that. I don't know if this retaining wall needs to be the way it's designed and the size it's designed to accommodate what you need, because Councilor Crosley's right. No matter what, you're going to need a special permit, but to me there's a very big difference between being 23.5 feet off the street and 19.
Mr. Chairman, actually I didn't say no matter what they do, they need a special permit. They could put a parking station here by right if they paved a lot more.
So I understand that, and that's what we have to think about.
And what they're doing instead, what I'm trying to say, and I think what they're trying to say, is they're trying to create a garden-like landscape in front of a house and makes the parking area appear more de minimis. And in order to do that, they would need to go straight in. If we think, or if this committee thinks, it's more important and that there's a safety issue here, and so to have a parking space in the front, they have to take out the retaining wall and turn in sideways so that they can, you know, they'll pave the whole front of the house instead of the walkway, that could be done.
That's exactly what planning suggested. Their memo says we encourage them to consider alternatives to the retaining wall. That's exactly what they wrote to us.
Can I just ask to see the alternate plan? Because I suspect that it retains the retaining wall, but has an angling of the parking spot with a larger curb cut, which has its own safety issues, but might get the car off the sidewalk.
Do we need a special permit to have a curb cut that wide? Right. Well, but
you not.
Go ahead.
Could you not angle the other way, though? Could you not come in and kind of angle to the left, come up straight against the wall, head in, and just be, you wouldn't get 5 feet.
There is a big telephone pole there.
But let me just finish. You wouldn't get 5 feet, but you would get maybe a little bit further off the sidewalk with the rear fender. You know what I'm saying? If you come in at an angle to the left, so like, you know, northwest, you know, on a map of the United States, pointing towards Washington, would that give you a couple feet maybe that you're now not in the sidewalk? And you still have a lot of lawn. If you made that a little wider, would that give you a little bit more clearance of the sidewalk? I think that the concern that's been raised is, you know, we're trying to balance. Obviously, we want you to have a nice yard, too. But if you lose a little bit of yard, have a little bit of angling, get the fender off the sidewalk, everybody could be happy.
We
Deb, with all respect, Councilor Crosby, I can recall a discussion we had in Ward 6 where we debated for hours about the safety of a parking space, which was because of the curve of the street. We're talking about parking that is literally running next to the sidewalk, so I think it's a legitimate concern.
It's absolutely a legitimate concern. However, we have permitted much less. There was a, sorry if I can't remember the street, but there was a two-family built by a developer who only left 16 feet to the sidewalk. And we got him to move a building back so he had 17 or 17 and a half feet, I think, is what we were able to do. We should have probably disproved the whole thing, but the will of the committee was to move it forward. This is giving more space than that.
I'm not sure why
we're trying to make a worse condition out of a better condition.
Just trying to think through the alternatives. Councilor Cody?
So I just want to share that my earlier comments, I do support what Councilor Crosby is getting at and where she's going with this, because I think they've worked this out to make the best-looking appearance and the best, most functional driveway they can do. As a point of reference, when you talk about the 19 feet, the full-size Chevy Suburban is 18.6 feet. So, short of a Chevy Suburban, anything else will fit in there. So I don't, you know, the average SUV is running about 15 to 16 feet.
That's what I have currently.
Pull them up right here. So,
let us know.
You know, and so I concur that I think they probably, you know, architect involved and everything else, they've done the best they can, because you could see earlier, with a 24-foot curb cut, it was kind of like a big carved-out area. I don't think you want to go back to that.
I mean, it's the will of the committee, and I don't want to belabor this. I continue to have concerns about the safety here. I think this is very close. I appreciate very much the goal here of trying to accommodate parking. It's attention. And I, for one, need to think that through a little bit more before I'm comfortable that this is the only alternative. And I do have a discomfort that, and I, not through any fault of anybody, but I have a discomfort that a retaining wall was built a month ago, and now we're coming in and saying we have to configure for that retaining wall, which we are doing. That's not an existing condition in my mind, but be that as it may. Do my colleagues have other comments on this? If people want to vote this out tonight, I'm more than happy to vote it. Councilor Schwartz?
If the petitioner's willing, I mean, I do know that there's been concern among another one of our councilor colleagues about this. If we could put this off to the next, maybe the 22nd, I know the 22nd is getting busy, but we could work with you to try to just make sure that everybody feels confident that we've exhausted all the possibilities. It might end up that you feel that this is still your best plan and you go forward with it, but if that would be okay, I would move to hold it.
It's really the will of the committee. I mean, I would personally prefer that I'd like to hear a little bit more from planning, frankly, because, and maybe you can do that right now, Mr. Cronin. The memo says you would ask for alternatives to the retaining wall. And did you have ideas for them, or was it just they should consider it?
Just to consider it. I am one who's not an engineer as well, and I understand the concern about the proximity to the footings, but if there was any way to redirect the flow of the retaining wall, just any considerations would I was pointing to.
Well, was it discussed with anybody in our engineering? I mean, I'm not trying to ask people to do the impossible here, but I do think with a retaining wall that was literally built a month and a half ago or 2 months ago, you know, is there any other alternative here? You're saying we don't have the expertise in-house to look at it. We don't have the expertise in-house to look at it.
I can bring it up to a member of the engineering department to see if there's alternatives.
I mean, I would, personally, I feel better if, and I don't like to make people come back, I really don't. But if the engineering department says, this is a retaining wall, this is the way you've got to do it, if you need it exactly the way it is, it's going to make me, frankly, much more comfortable with doing this because I understand the alternatives you're facing. If the engineering department comes back with a suggestion that this is how you might do it differently, I'd at least want to consider that. That's my view. But I take it's the will of the committee.
So, Councilor Auchincloss, do you want to comment?
I think we should vote tonight, Mr. Chair.
Fine.
If we did, I would ask that it be on second call, because I do think that there's work to be done on this. I think that my colleagues in Ward 6 would appreciate another opportunity to work with the petitioner about this. So I would move hold, but the committee is in a rush. I understand.
Are you going to look for an opportunity to have your colleagues meet with the petitioner and try to figure out if there's another solution?
Absolutely.
There's no other solution. The other solution is that we showed you the other solution.
Ma'am, with all respect, this is all new to us. You've been living with this for years now, and I'm sure you and your landscape architect are quite comfortable that this is the only solution. Our job is just to make sure that, you know, we have to test that assumption. It very well may be that you're absolutely correct, and this is the only practical solution. And I think if that's the case, frankly, you're going to get the full support of this committee. But my concern is if I have a discomfort level and a couple of Councilor Schwartz's colleagues in Ward 6 have a discomfort level, it comes to the full board, there's questions about it, we send it back to committee, and we end up delaying it further. What I hope to do is take it up on the 22nd so it can get voted on July 10th, which really is an effective delay of about 2 weeks to do that.
I'll be clear. I'm trying to find a solution. I'm not trying to find a way to prevent this from happening. I think
understand that. Nor am I. So are you available on the 22nd if we hold this item?
Yes.
I realize that's not your preference, but we will. Let me be very clear. We are going to vote this out on the 22nd, and it will come to the full council on July 10th. I'll add that we have just so you understand what our workload is like, on June 19th, we're voting on the Washington Place project. I think that's going to be a lengthy, probably all-evening debate. If there's any controversy about this project, it's going to get postponed to July 10th anyway, just as a matter of time. And I'd really much prefer that we have your project fully vetted by the time it comes, so that if it's something that we all agree with you, it will be really smooth sailing for you.
And that's on the 22nd, correct?
On the 22nd, the committee meeting on the 22nd. I fully expect between now and then we're going to do a couple things. One, Councilor Schwartz, will you talk to the petitioner and her architect, number one. Number two, Mr. Cronin, will you make sure you talk to the people from engineering and give us a definitive answer? I mean, if the answer that you professionally or they professionally conclude is, hey, this is the way it is, that's very important to us. If they have something different, please communicate well in advance to the petitioner so they can evaluate what the suggestion is. Okay? Does that work? All right. So I have a motion by Councilor Schwartz to hold. All in favor of holding? 6-0, it's held. We will be here on the 22nd, and again, we will vote on this on the 22nd. Okay? Thank you very much. All right, next. And a full night on the 22nd, so. All right, this is 12817, special permit to increase the non-conforming FAR at 15 Ricker Road. EMJ Prime Build LLC. This is in Ward 1. Good evening, sir.
Good evening. My name is Adrian McShear. I am from Architects 2, here to represent EMJ Builders. This project, as is mentioned, is at 15 Ricker Road. It is a non-conforming lot, as the lot is only 4,776 square feet, and the building itself is non-conforming in the fact that its FAR, as it exists, is 0.9. Zero. So what we're looking to do is ask for a relief on the FAR as we are adding dormers to the attic, and we are actually adding a small percentage to the FAR. The FAR is going to be going from 0.90 to 0.93. In conjunction with increasing the FAR, we are looking for a variance on the open space requirements. There was an existing deck in the rear yard, which was non-compliant, that was infringing upon the rear yard setback. We have removed that, And we are asking for two decks, a first floor and a second floor deck, to be added to the side of the structure, which will be compliant with side yard setbacks, but it will take the open space requirement from 46.5 down to 44.6, still in violation of the 50% requirement. Should be noted that the existing deck, when it was in place, had the open space at 44.3% of open space on the project. The planning board has expressed some concerns with the landscaping at the front, as there are two parking spots in the front, each for two cars, for the two units inside the building. And the concern has been with the exposure of the foundation and softening of that landscape at the front. So we've been asked to provide a landscape plan, which we are working on at this time. One other item of note is that a building permit was already issued priorly for renovations to the interior of the first, second floors, as well as the basement. At this point, we also decided to add some dormers to increase some bedroom space up there.
So can I just get some clarity here? What you're proposing now is, it has not changed since it was submitted to the...
No, it has not.
Okay. So as I understand it, you've got two issues. One is the dormers.
Correct.
And the second are the decks.
Correct.
And the deck in the back, are they accessible from the first, from the rear yard, or are they only accessible from the property itself?
The deck on the first floor is accessible from inside the unit and also leads down to the rear yard, as it is the second means of egress. On the second floor, the deck is only accessible from the unit itself, as it provides a sort of outdoor space immediately to the dining and kitchen area. However, there is a second means of egress, which is just a small landing that goes down the back of the building, which you should see in some of the elevations that were submitted.
And is there a similar means of egress currently?
There is currently, or there was, I believe it's actually been removed, the stairs been removed, but there was an internal stair coming down to the exterior deck, which was in violation of the rear yard setback as a means of egress from the second floor.
Okay. Just want to understand where
yep.
we are. Okay, anything else, sir?
That is it.
All right. Planning?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As stated, the petition before you is to increase the non-conforming FAR and to further decrease the minimum open space.
Okay. So, let me see. Is there any member of the public who wish to be heard? As seeing none, I'm going to entertain a motion to close the public hearing. So moved by Councilor Auchincloss, all in favor of closing the public hearing. 5 in favor, none opposed. Before we act, questions or comments for the petitioner? And maybe we can break it up into the dormers first. Does anybody have any issues about the dormers? Do you? If it's related, let's do the dormers first, and then we'll do the deck second. What's related, Councilor Clasley? And if you like them, that's great, but just tell us who is concerned.
It's not about liking them or not liking them. I mean, I have no problem with what you want to do with the building, and I have really no problem with the idea of this, except that you are asking for... And it's related, because you're asking for an increase in FAR to have the dormers, so which it means you're asking for an increase in intensity of use, because you're going from 4 to 6 bedrooms, really changing the nature of the intensity of use of the building. Most of the site is covered with asphalt, or a lot of the site, I should say, and you're asking for a variance on the open space requirement. That's the piece that disturbs me. But I don't know how you're going to be able to cut back on the amount of impervious surface you have on the site, because you're increasing the intensity of use of the building. In other words, you're going to need those 4 parking spaces.
We are not changing the current footprint of the building, so...
I understand. I'm not asking to not to build the dormers. Building up is fine with me personally. I am concerned about the size of the site and how you can, meet the open space requirement, it's how those things interrelate in my mind, and what kind of mitigation is appropriate in this case if you're allowing a much higher intensity of use for a very small parcel, relative to its size, and that's causing, even though you're not changing the footprint, you know, you've got more than 50% impervious surface on the site. Open space.
To count the number of bedrooms in places, and we're not supposed to worry about how many people might occupy a single-family home.
Well, if we didn't allow the dormers...
It's actually a two-unit project.
It's a two-unit project.
We're not, we've had these issues before where we've had folks come in looking for lots of people to occupy
the site. But excuse me, it is relevant. We talk about it all the time when we talk about multifamily units and how many bedrooms relative to how many units. So you can have more units with fewer bedrooms or fewer units with more bedrooms because, as we all know, the intensity of use is about bedrooms. I'm raising it because, you know, the front of this site has parking spaces that are right up to the edge of the property line, and they're not more than 19 or 20 feet deep. You know, these are about 20 by 20 foot. Is that what they are?
Yeah.
20 by 20 foot spaces. Same thing we were just dealing with, but all of a sudden this is okay. And not only is it okay, we're going to increase the intensity of use on the property.
Because the parking spaces are there, Councilor Crossley. We can't take them away.
Yeah, I understand that. We're adding to the building, so we're adding to the intensity.
So what do you suggest we do?
Nothing. I'm just raising it for your contemplation rather than to be rushed through the process.
I personally will contemplate, and I appreciate that. And I don't mean to jest. A fair comment. And forgive me after being up here for a couple hours. Other comments on the dormers besides that one? Okay. Can we turn then to the rear, the decks, which I think the planning department had some concern about, and I think others. Comments on the decks? Councilor Cody?
So I understand with the concept that they're in the open space and all that, but if you look at the whole context of what they've done on the site, so they took out an old deck that was basically into the setback, correct?
Correct.
That was taken out. Was that taken out a while ago?
It was actually just taken out when they started the interior renovations. They removed that deck as well as part of it. So the rear yard is compliant right now.
So these new decks that are coming in now, they seem to be more compact and seem to fit in much better?
Correct. They are squeezed in. They're narrow on the side, so they comply with the side yard setback, and they don't even go past the end of the building, so they don't even go into the rear yard.
And
the side yard steps down from the first floor.
Right, and they're out of the setback completely now.
Correct.
Yeah. So I'm fine with the decks myself. Yeah.
Anybody else is quite, we Councilor Auchincloss.
I think it's also, initially reviewing this, the decks concern me because it is such an infringement on the open space. I think it's also worth noting, though, that this area is leading into Brighton, and that is the norm for architecture in Brighton. I remember correctly from when I lived there for a summer. It's a lot of two families with decks on both floors and not a whole lot of yard.
The deck effectively becomes some outdoor space for the second floor.
Well, I think you were getting to that point as well. So go ahead. I was going to say the same thing. It seems to me the deck functions as the outdoor space in a very tight space. We obviously have reasons we want open space and lack of more non-impervious surface. Get that right? The idea, but in this kind of constrained site, the alternative to the deck is space is probably not usable, is my concern. Okay. Yes, Councilor Crossley.
So I agree that the idea of questioning the deck probably came from the open space question. Is there any way to reduce the amount of paved area in the front? The entire front yard is paved. Do you really need that much?
Well, we have two units which require two parking spaces each, and that is provided. So theoretically, at 20 feet wide by 20 feet deep, we are slightly bigger than what is required to make it compliant. We would only need 18 by 18. Or 18 by 19, sorry, to be compliant. So yes, you could theoretically shave some off, but it's still not going to bring us to the 50% number, whether we leave the decks in or not, because as it exists, our open space number is 46.5, so we're still 3.5% underneath the required 50% of the lot being open. And if we shave it down to absolutely meet the bare bone minimum of parking space requirement, we're still not going to get to the 50%.
And did you consider using permeable pavers?
We actually did not, because based on past history coming before the board, they have been tossed out as a solution. This goes back a number of years because it can always be paved over, is what we've been told in the past.
I don't recall that.
Yeah. I'm talking several.
Must be prior iterations of this council. Right. At least Councilor Lipoff, do you have any memory? You're a veteran here. Any memory of that?
They may not by right. They may not legally be paved over if they're part of the board.
Oh, so part of the board. Okay.
Would that help you, Council? Would that help here? Is that feasible?
Well, I think that's the
Are you amenable to that? Changing off the paving stones for drivers?
I can't.
You'd rather not, but, I mean, we'll see what the board comes back with.
Well,
it is more expense. So.
If it's going to be, I mean, if you were doing the driveways anyway, are you doing the driveways anyways?
No intent to redo the driveways. No, we're going to do some landscaping around it as was asked for.
I'm just wondering, are we asking the homeowner?
Yes, that is the homeowner back there.
Sir, could you just come up to the microphone, please, so we just get your name and on the record? Your name, sir?
John Kusaridis, and I'm the owner of 15 Ricker Road.
And is this your residence, sir?
And me and my brother. I live on the first floor. My brother lives on the second floor.
Got it. Okay. So you're looking, you're not planning on redoing these driveways as we sit here now?
Unfortunately, I did them last year. I refinished them, so they're brand new. So for me to rip them up, it'd be a ton of money.
Okay. All right. Councilor Crosby, you want to leave it? Okay. Okay. So, Councilor Schwartz.
I apologize if this is already covered, but my concern on the porches, or this one question I had, was more about screening rather than the open space. Is there much screening to the abutting property on those porches intended? Because they're close to the lot line.
Yeah, close to the setback line. There was no intent really right now to put any screening. There's no place to do any landscape screening in place, but could we provide some sort of screen on the deck? That's possibly.
Yeah.
Because the planning department, you suggested landscaping screening.
On the front.
On the front, correct. I guess my concern sometimes about these is that you're getting close to the setback line, you're putting something new in there that is kind of encroaching upon your neighbor, even though it's not across the setback line. So it helps if you can screen it. I think that that's a neighborly thing and, you know, obviously a positive thing to be able to do. You're saying that there's not much room in the on the property line to put trees or anything?
Right. There's a small retaining wall there. They're extending it, and between both properties, they're tight to the property line with the setback, so you're maybe 15 feet between the structures, 16 feet. The family has lived there for a number of years, so they can speak with the neighbor and see what can be arranged if some screening is...
And your alternative was to do something on the porch itself?
Yeah. If we can do some sort of screening on the porch if necessary.
Okay.
All set?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Any other questions or comments from my colleagues? Do I have a motion? Did we close the public hearing, did I not?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Motion to approve. Councilor Auchincloss has moved approval. Do you have a draft order for us, Mr. Cronin?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Can you take out the word only on the third line down from the bottom? Okay. Other than that, questions, comments, folks? Okay. Any conditions? Oh, I'm sorry, there's a second one. Forgive me. Yes. Sure.
You might want to add that we're not increasing the footprint of the structure.
Yeah, that's a good point. Let's add that in. Okay. Next. Okay, any comments on this one, folks? All right, those are findings, Mr. Cronin?
Okay. Only two findings, Mr. Chairman.
Any conditions?
Standard conditions, final landscape plan and final site plan.
Councilor Schwartz, did you want to ask something?
Could that discussion about screening enter into your final approval of the landscape plan? I mean, I don't know how to put that, but...
Absolutely. My only question is...
How do you
screen the second floor?
I think that's the concern, really, is the second floor.
Right.
Am I correct?
yeah, on the side.
Councilor Lipoff?
I think we have to be careful for every element that we bring in to say it must be screened. It doesn't, to me, on a two-family home, a second-floor deck does not have to be screened. Somebody from the back, I'm sure there are decks on the properties that are in the back on either side of this property, the deck before. We shouldn't be looking to ask people to screen a second-floor deck on a two-family home. I don't think it's necessary. If we had neighbors here and there was some element that was intrusive and people were concerned about it because it was in their face, but a deck on the upper unit, I don't feel, needs to be screened at all.
Well, we disagree.
Okay. Are we comfortable with a landscaping plan, but we're not going to condition it as requiring the screening? Councilor Schwartz?
I'm going to abstain because I haven't been present for the whole discussion, and I'll have to think about it. But I respect my colleague's viewpoints, just like I know he respects mine, so I'll have to think about his
beauty of
his
this
point of view.
One of the beauties of this council is that we actually get to disagree occasionally. Okay. We have a motion by Councilor Auchincloss. All in favor of approval? I've got 5 in favor. Any opposed? 1 abstention. 501. So we put this up on the 19th. No need to be there that evening, and that's how it goes. If you have any questions, just talk to our committee clerk.
Okay, great.
Best of luck with your project, gentlemen.
Thank you very much.
Okay, next, last substantive one, and then we have one appointment of the BC Neighborhood Council. Actually, why don't we just get that done? Okay, so I don't forget it. 125-17, Lynn Yetra, of 15 Rochester Road, being appointed to the BC Neighborhood Council to replace someone who has resigned. Any comment or question on that? Okay, do I have a motion to approve? Councilor Lipoff has moved to approve. All in favor of approval? 6 in favor, none opposed. Okay, our last item of the evening is 38-17, a special permit to exceed FAR 1016 Center Street. This is Claudine Grossman, Ward 7. We'll recall that this was before Councilor Schwartz, I think, has recused himself from this matter. Oh, yes, you can. Come on. No, you won't. All right. Good evening. If you just state your name again for the record, please. Could you speak into the microphone, or maybe it's off? Thank you. Better? Can you check, Deb?
Good. Can you hear me now?
Much better. Just
thank
the name
you.
And address, please.
My name is Mary Spear. I'm an architect working with Claudine and Adam Grossman.
Okay. Let me just kind of put this in context. We had extensive discussion about this petition previously. I think it would be most helpful if you could tell us what, if anything, has changed from what you had previously, why you rejected any other changes. I don't see any member of the public here on this one, but I'll entertain public comment and then questions from my colleagues. So go ahead, please.
So we're returning to the council after reflecting your feedback and suggestions. And in an effort to reduce the total gross square footage and to make the proposed addition more compact, we reduced the length of the indoor court by 3 feet, so bringing we were at allowable side setback of 7.5 feet. We're now at 10.5 feet. The rear yard setback, allowable 15 feet. We're still there at 15 feet. So square footage-wise, that was one revision. And we also took
to heart the comments about the aesthetic nature of the indoor court, and what we came back with is highlighting more architectural features that are also a part of the main house, such as we enlarged the windows on the clerestory level, and most importantly, we tried to reduce the mass by introducing a new sided skirt midway up the side of the indoor court. Those are the.
I know there was one set of neighbors that had concerns about this. Did you talk to them about that?
We did, and we moving the length, reducing the length of the court, should hopefully lessen their concerns.
Okay.
We have the shadow study that we also revised. If you'd like to see that.
Sure, if we could.
So that's we started in March, right? And now here we are in June.
So just so I'm clear, the lower middle is the property is 1016, correct?
Correct.
And the shadows you're saying will I think I understand that.
That's in the morning. It's 8 o'clock in the morning, and then we go to noon.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I wonder if the petitioner could either slow that down or make sure the time frames that when you say it's 8 o'clock in the morning and then to noon, I saw a really long shadow when you said noon. That couldn't be noon.
So I have a still shot. So it's where it breaks down the month and the time on, I think it was the last the last slide of our PowerPoint,
the longer shadow. It wouldn't be a longer shadow than 8 o'clock in the morning. Yeah.
No.
Are you saying that you could give us, if we still just not clear what see. We're looking at when
sure.
you're showing the picture?
And it moves kind of fast.
It does.
So that's
first tell us what month you're in, and then
we start March to spring, then summer, fall, and winter.
I'm having kind of a hard time.
I apologize. It was tough to add the text to the actual animation, so I can understand it's. If we start from the very beginning, I know we're starting in March, and the breakdown is 8 o'clock in the morning, and it pauses, and then we go to noon.
Can you do that?
And then 3 o'clock, it briefly pauses, and then ends at 6 in the afternoon. March, so there it stopped at noon. That's the morning shot.
Okay.
Now, this is June, 8 o'clock in the morning. This is noon.
And if I'm correct, the addition is on the top of the
project. Yeah. So what, does it only go to 3 o'clock in the afternoon?
I mean, I don't see it. I don't see any problem.
Right. All we should be, you know, looking at is the box at the back with the sports court.
I understand. So yeah. If we're only going to 3 o'clock in the afternoon, it stops at a little past the property line.
Yeah. And if you go...
Yeah, okay. Something else, I don't really understand where it's going.
But also, I mean, there's trees that we're not accounting for. There's,
I don't want to cut anyone short. Let me, since I have no one else here except Mr. Coop from member of the public, and I don't think he's here to speak, is there any member of the public who wishes to be heard this evening? Seeing none, I'm going to entertain a motion to close the public hearing. Councilor Auchincloss moved to close. All in favor of closure? 5 in favor, none opposed. Planning, Mr. Corner, do you have anything of concern here?
I just want to start and correct some figures from the earlier public hearing memo. The initial public hearing memo did not measure the height of the proposed and existing structure from average grade as per the ordinance. So the... the initial height of the sports court was given as 24 feet 8 inches. However, that did not, that measurement was not taken from the average grade, and the original proposed height was 28 feet 2 inches. The main ridgeline of the principal structure is measured from the average grade is 33 feet 6 inches. The proposed sport court has been decreased by roughly or approximately 2 feet 11 inches and has also been decreased in height by 14 inches.
Okay. All right. Councilor Crosby?
Actually, the height of the main ridgeline of the principal structure from average mean grade is about 38 feet. It's much taller than the garage. If you scale it, it's very tall.
Well,
I don't know where that.
Where are you getting your numbers from, Mr. Cronin, and where are you getting your numbers from, Councilor Cronin?
Reasonably so you can be within a foot, be within half a foot probably.
And Mr. Cronin, where are you getting
your numbers? I scaled mine as well.
Pardon?
I scaled mine as well.
So we have a difference of opinion.
I would probably lean towards
Roof ridges, so, and, you know, on the main house, but the tallest one is quite a bit taller.
Do you have anything you can add to that?
The discrepancy is for the main, that's at hand now, is that the width of the main house?
It doesn't matter except to be accurate, and it is important that we be accurate from mean grade regarding the new structure that's proposed.
So your point, Councilor Crosley, is as you measure it from grade as close to 38 feet of the new structure?
No, the highest ridge, as he says, the height of the main ridge line of the principal structure, that would be...
And you're saying it's close, it's 38 feet, not 33.6.
Approximately. Much closer.
You know what,
I think it's okay. I just wanted it to be correct because there's a lot of variation in the numbers there.
What do you say, ma'am?
I don't know which ridge she's referring to.
Tallest one.
The tallest one. I think the 33 and a half, we're referring to
the lower one?
The lower one. And then it peaks up, then the...
Could we take this offline and maybe Councilor Crosley, you could point out to Mr. Cronin where you did your...
We have had a conversation. There's some other dimensions, too, that are more important to the new structure.
Well,
so if we could just keep going, that would be great.
Sure. Anything else?
think I covered the inconsistencies in the original site plan also differ from the architectural plan. So the setback from the sport court to the side property line to the abutter at 1010 Center Street, I believe, is 10.7 feet. And there's a difference in the plans and the original proposal.
Okay. Okay, anything else? Okay, colleagues, questions or comments on this one? All right. Do I have a motion to approve? Councilor Auchincloss moves to approve. All in favor of approval? 1, 2, 3, 4. Opposed?
My reasons, because I'm not going to raise this at the final board meeting.
Sure. Please do.
So, this really isn't about you or your design. Your design is lovely. To me, this is about consistent application of a rule that I'm having a lot of trouble with, and I think we all have a lot of trouble with. And that was raised whenever we heard this a month and a half ago or so, because when we approve going over the floor area ratio allowed on a particular site, there needs to be a serious attempt to mitigate the mass and bulk of the structure. And you did have, and it's really not for the sake of the neighbors, but you did have one neighbor who complained about the large two-story wall and so forth. The principal concern with this is that it is a two-story building. It's a two-story wall, and it's a large mass that you're seeking additional relief for. And in order to reduce the height, it was suggested you bring the floor down to close to grade, maybe a step up from the garage, whatever. That would have reduced the height of the structure and the apparent mass by about 3 feet. And it's doable. It's an easy architectural solution. You didn't have to take space out of the sport court, which you did anyway, and I appreciate that. You should have taken the space out of the garage. Well, so you even brought the garage forward to try to calm the whole thing down. And you probably had other design intentions, like you wanted the clear story windows all the way around or whatever your reasons were. But I just don't think that there was a response to that, and I think it's an easy thing to do for this project. So I actually will, I don't know if it matters. I think I should vote no today, if I'm going to vote no, but I'm not going to raise it. I'm not going to put it on second call. In other words, other people are not likely to question this.
I can respond to your comments because they were noted, and lowering... We did look into that, but lowering the court would require then another interior set of stairs to get us to the first floor, so by adding another set of stairs, we're not. And by the way, lowering the structure wouldn't affect FAR, so we thought if we're here to get FAR relief, then we thought shortening the length of it would accomplish that.
No need for, I think, Councillor Crosley, what she's doing is what's required under our rules, which is a councillor opposes or is going to vote against a special permit petition. He or she needs to say so on the record. Councillor Crosley is indicating that she's going to do it here in committee rather than put this on what's called second call at the City Council. Her objections and comments will be duly noted as part of our record. I don't want to speak to
it. It means we won't have a debate on the floor of the full council.
Unlikely.
Unless someone else has similar concerns. But I would like to respond to when you don't need a second set of stairs. You didn't need to have a set of stairs inside the sport court. You could have it between the garage and the sport court in what is now garage space where you already have stairs to get down to the garage. You put in a demising wall, you're all done. It's not a hard thing to do. And it was very curious to me that you decided to take almost 3 feet out of the sport court anyway as a way of, pulling back from the yard. But that wasn't the principal concern. The principal concern was the height of the sheer height of it.
All right.
But that's all.
Good. All right. Did you have one last comment?
Just to remind me, if anybody here remembers, is this the one where you had neighbors next door whose home was on the market?
That's the one.
That house is now under contract, and they are not here, correct?
Okay. All right. We have, did you vote, is your vote a no vote, Councillor Crosley?
Richard.
I think you do.
Leave it alone.
Okay. So the vote is 4 in favor, 1 opposed, no abstentions, and that concludes our hearing, okay? If you have any questions about the process, speak to Ms. Khan. Good luck with everything.
Thank you.
Thank you.